Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL
season. Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast lead over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Good afternoon, football fans. Welcome to Patriots Playbook. I am your guest host for the afternoon, Mike Parenti. And joining me again in the co-pilot's chair is the accomplished author and sports editor of the Boston Metro, Chris Price. We're going to start calling you the gentle giant. For those who don't know, Chris Price is 7'1".
I'm not 7'1".
A mountain of a man. He eats muscle sandwiches all day.
Muscle sandwiches.
But yet he is soft-spoken and gentle.
Thank you.
Therefore, the gentle giant. How are you this afternoon, Chris?
Not bad at all.
Not bad. That's it?
No, you know, it's a little cold. It's a little, you know.
So you're not great, but you're not bad.
You know what? I'm feeling good, and I'll be feeling even better come Sunday.
We should all be excited. This is the AFC Championship. This is it. The Final Four of the NFL, the New England Patriots, are back in the conference title game for the second year in a row, hosting the San Diego Superchargers on Sunday at 3 o'clock. Should be a fun game. Do you think it's going to be a fun game? And by fun, I mean close, competitive. Is this going to be a competitive game?
I think it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be close for probably three quarters.
Okay.
And I don't want to say good. Bottom line is, I think the Patriots are going to win by 2 touchdowns.
Is this music going to play all day? We got a fade out at some point here. What's going on? I guess so. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I'm a little edgy today. I just had a muscle sandwich myself. I have that extra pump, that NO Explode pump right now.
I think apparently, after your fourth show, you get to be a I almost lost.
Oh, yeah. Gary Gradecki getting us kicked off the air. We're not even 6 minutes into the show.
I think the Patriots are going to win by 2 touchdowns. I think it's going to be close probably for the first 2, maybe 2.5 quarters. But I think ultimately, in the end, someone's going to make a play, and they're going to put it out of reach.
So the score may not indicate how close the game actually is.
I'm thinking somewhere along the lines of 31-14, 31-17, something like that. Okay. I think there's going to be a touchdown late that really kind of puts it out of reach, not unlike the Jacksonville game.
I like that. I like that prediction.
Or a score. I'm sorry, a score okay. late that really puts it out of reach, not unlike Jacksonville.
Well, we've got a lot for you this afternoon. We're going to break down this game, of course. We're also going to break down the NFC Championship. Green Bay hosting the New York Football Giants, who are attempting to become just the 3rd team in NFL history to win 3 road games in the postseason to reach a Super Bowl.
Now, I know you got a lot of strong feelings about that. We talked about with the PFW guys before we came on. You are a Giants guy. I think everyone should know this. I think everyone should know this going in. You're a Giants
guy. Die hard, born and raised New York Football Giant fan.
A longtime Giants fan. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that? We could just kind of touch on it really briefly
if we could.
How do you feel about the Giants' chances going into this weekend? Win, loss, you know, going against Favre. What do you think of the matchup?
You want a prediction?
Yeah, give me a prediction.
Pain. I had to do it once. I'm sorry. I had to do it once.
Addiction? Pain.
Thank you.
Shouldn't be surprised coming from a Rocky.
You knew it was going to come. I was hoping you would lead me into it. I had to kind of drag you in there. That's okay, though.
That's true.
All kidding aside, I don't like the matchup. But again, I didn't like last week's matchup. I wasn't confident going into Dallas. Although, you play the odds and you think, okay, how many times can you beat a team 3 times in a season? How often does that happen?
Very rare.
I think the Pats did it against Miami 1 year, if I'm not correct, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't it back-to-back weeks? They played them in the season finale, then they played them in the wild card game?
That was a long time ago.
Yes. But it just doesn't happen all that often. I mean, at some point, the team that's been beaten twice already gets an edge at some point, and then maybe they figure out what they did wrong the first 2 games, and maybe they use that to their advantage. Again, at the same time, you'd rather go in being the team that's won the first 2 rather than the team that's lost the first 2.
Yeah.
So the Giants were going in with the odds against them, but did a nice job running the football. They also got the pass rush. They got that pass rush going in the 4th quarter, which was big. And like I said to the guys in the crossover, those last 3 offensive series for Dallas, they were in Romo's face, and they hit him every time he dropped back to pass. Having said that, I think it's tougher to do against Brett Favre. He's more of a freestyler out there, mm-hmm. if that's the right term to use. Mm-hmm. He can kind of freelance and do some things. And he'll do some shuffle passes, some underhand throws, and behind the back and through the legs. And,
but I want to watch Brett Favre.
He's a fancy guy. He knows how to improvise. I think it's tough. I just think he's playing so well right now, and that team's at home, and they play well in their own backyard. It's going to be single digits. even though I don't think that's going to be a factor, I think they kind of get off on that sort of thing. I don't know, in some sick, twisted sort of way.
We don't like to look too far ahead.
No,
and around here, no one likes to
look too far ahead.
Well, no one around here likes. Oh, okay, you know, their MO around here is take a week to week, game to game kind of play.
I'm looking at next season, week three.
But let's look ahead right now for just a couple of seconds and ponder. Just think about the situation that we're going to have as members of the media the 2 week lead up to the Super Bowl. If it's the Patriots and the Green Bay Packers, it's going to be 2 weeks of St. Brett Favre going up against the evil overlords from New England.
It's
going
to be a ball wash fest.
It's
gonna, it really is.
I wouldn't have used that phrase, but at the
same time. Oh, that's the phrase that needs to be used.
I think that it's going to be comparable.
They're
going to
be slurping Brett Favre all freaking week.
And how bad do you think it's going to be in that stadium?
I might choke myself to death, actually.
Super Bowl 42. I'm going to say
the man love will be in the air.
My early estimate, it's going to be probably 70 to 30 Packers fans.
You're probably right, because they just have this sick, sick, twisted following. If you've ever talked to people in Green Bay, they're nuts. They are nuts. I hope I don't offend anybody, but they are nuts.
People love their Packers.
They are strange. They love their Packers. Packers football is their life out there. That's all they have out there. What else do they have? The Brewers? Brewers suck.
Yeah, the Brewers.
No one cares about the Brewers. Yeah. They don't have a hockey team.
There it goes. People all over Wisconsin are clicking off their computers as they speak.
Oh, all 10 of them. Great.
Send us an email at webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. Let us know what you think.
I'd say that two week layoff would just, it's, first of all, it's too long.
Yeah.
We don't need 2 weeks because you just rehash every stupid storyline 800 times. It's going to be 2 weeks of Spygate and how Spygate fueled this team and all this nonsense and the chip on their shoulders and how they won for their coach and everything. And it's all a bunch of crap. We all know it's a bunch of crap. But we're going to have to hear it for 2 weeks. It's going to be rammed down our throats, in addition to how Brett Favre can cure cancer and how he's the greatest human being, you know, the second coming of Gandhi and everything. And we're going to have to sit there and listen to that and absorb that as well. And, yeah, I may rip my own ears off and gouge out my own eyes before the second Monday. So, I mean, and I don't want to give myself 7 or 8 days.
I don't want to jump
ahead. I can't deal with it.
Again, I don't want to work
no,
you up too much.
We should probably look at these matchups first. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to break this down here because it's Patriots Chargers. This is not the matchup we all thought was going to happen.
Certainly not.
Not the matchup the networks wanted. We know that for sure.
Last week we were sitting here anticipating a Patriots Colts AFC championship.
Oh yeah, we were all fired up.
Certainly not what we got.
You know, it was going to be like WrestleMania 6, The Ultimate Warrior against Hulk Hogan. The mega powers collide.
I never saw WrestleMania 6.
At the Sky Dome?
No, I never saw that one.
What an awesome match. No. What a great main event.
I remember three. Two or three at the Silver Dome.
Three was at the Silver Dome.
Yeah.
Two. WrestleMania 2 was historic because it was held in three separate locations via satellite. In New Jersey, Chicago, and Los Angeles, with the main event in Los Angeles,
just
Hulk Hogan.
In one place.
Hulk Hogan beating King Kong Bundy in a steel cage match.
That was a mistake.
That was pretty revolutionary TV, though,
at that time. Yeah,
1986,
you know?
Keep
your focus on what's important. Keep your focus on the one big man. Keep your focus on the Super Bowl. It should be the Super Bowl of wrestling.
Yeah. Well, this could have been WrestleMania, this matchup.
Yeah, it could have been.
This could have been the typical face turn, if you will.
Armageddon.
The Ultimate Warrior became a good guy, I think, after beating Hulk Hogan, didn't he?
Yep.
Okay, so that's called a face turn in the wrestling business, in case you didn't know that.
It could have been Armageddon, too. It could have been, like, I remember growing up, I really came of age as a football fan in the early 90s.
Yeah.
Those NFC matchups, those great NFC championship matchups between the 49ers and the Cowboys.
Yes.
That really, for me, in a lot of ways, defined football.
Awesome.
Even
games.
Though I'm not a Cowboys fan or a 49ers fan.
You didn't have to be.
But exactly.
Yeah.
Those championship games were the Super Bowl.
Exactly.
You knew that those games, whoever was going to win that game was going to go on to the Super Bowl. We were denied a little bit of that here this year because there's no Patriots-Colts. That being said, it's still a really interesting matchup. It's still a very compelling matchup. When you consider the history between these two teams, when you consider what's gone on over the last year or so between the Patriots and the Chargers, it's still a lot of fun. There's still no lack of storylines here when the Chargers are involved.
I think you're absolutely right about one thing, too, in particular how this would have been the Super Bowl. Because we know whoever was going to win was going to beat the NFC team.
Yeah.
Now we're not so sure. If the Chargers pull off an upset here, are you convinced they beat either Green Bay or New York?
No.
Are you 100% sure?
No.
No, you're not. See, we had this last year. Colts-Patriots, AFC title game. We knew whoever's coming out of the NFC, whether it was Chicago or New Orleans, was not going to beat either one of those teams.
Mm-hmm.
If the Pats had held on to that 21-3 lead, they were going to win the Super Bowl. We all know that. We don't have that certainty now. So there's a little bit of a little more drama thrown into the mix, maybe?
Yeah.
But see, here's the thing, though. To me, this game is more of a certainty than it would have been with Indianapolis coming to town. I really feel that way. I know it's hard to look back on that and say the Colts would have been the team that knocked them off because they couldn't even take care of San Diego at home. I just think in terms of matchups, Indianapolis' strengths versus this team's weaknesses would have been a tougher matchup than I think what the Chargers can present here.
One of the things that I want to get into today is the individual man-on-man matchups that I think are going to define this game. And I think one of them we talked a little bit today during the press conference, and Belichick talked about it, and I know some of the players talked about it as well, is the matchup in the slot for the Patriots. Wes
yes.
Welker against Florence. I think that's going to be a really interesting matchup. I think that's going to be one of the matchups really, really worth watching.
I think it's going to be an ass-whooping. I don't like Florence at all.
No.
I do not like Florence at all. I think Welker's going to eat his lunch and check his oil early and often.
Going to check his oil?
Check his oil.
I've never heard that one before.
I had a coach tell me that. Bryant University men's basketball coach Max Good used that phrase to me once.
Gotta check his oil.
About one of his young players playing against, I think it was an exhibition game against Syracuse.
Mm-hmm.
Because they checked his oil a lot or something to that effect. I just thought that was great.
They're going to be checking Florence's oil.
They're going to be checking Florence's oil.
I'm also intrigued as to how the Chargers are going to try and defend Randy Moss.
Yeah.
I want to know if they're going to try and do some of the things that Cleveland did earlier in the year. I want to know if they're going to do some of the things that Jacksonville did last week in the divisional playoff game, if they're going to roll a lot of coverage over to his side, if they're going to play some two-deep zone, how they're going to try and take him out of the game. Because, as you know, I always go back to this great quote from Romeo Crennel, when it comes to trying to stop the Patriots passing game, you have to pick your poison. You either have to focus on Moss and hope that the other guys don't beat you, or kind of play everyone straight up in single coverage and hope that your cornerbacks are good enough to try and slow Moss down.
Or you could do what the Giants said. You could take Welker out on a 3rd and 10, and we don't want to give up the 11-yard pass, but we'll give up the 65-yarder to Moss for a touchdown instead. But to illustrate your point, I think they will do a little bit of what Jacksonville did. Maybe they'll blitz a little more, hopefully.
Yeah.
I mean, Jacksonville couldn't have had a more vanilla game plan defensively than what they had on Saturday.
They tried everything that they could. I don't know if I would classify it as vanilla.
Vanilla.
But they tried a few different things, but I don't think they got the pressure that they needed to get on Brady. They pretty much, I don't think, probably 90 to 95% of the time, just sent 4 guys. And that left Brady with so much time back there in the pocket. I think one of the things that we've learned, if you do want to beat the Patriots, though, is you have to send a lot of guys.
Well, that's the thing.
You have to be willing to, and I've said this before, we've talked about this, you have to be willing to lose to the Patriots 100-0. You have to take a lot of chances. Jacksonville took some chances, didn't take others. And I think ultimately in the end, the fact that they didn't get that kind of pressure on Brady cost them. We can sit here and say,
let me ask you a question,
but I think they didn't get the pressure that they needed to get on Brady to slow that passing game down, slow that offense
in
down.
In other words, you're assuming that they're going to score their points. Okay, they're going to get their 35. It's just, how are we going to give up the 35? We're going to let them go on 9-minute drives because we're not playing any press coverage whatsoever.
Yeah.
So why take all the time off the clock and now you have no time whatsoever? Let them score on 2 plays then.
I think within the context...
Blitz and let him score on a 60-yard touchdown, get the ball back and try to score.
I think within the context of their game plan, they need to spend a little more time on the field because the defense is not as young as it used to be. And I'm not saying the defense doesn't get the stops that they need. And I may be looking too deep into kind of a
semi-conspiracy
theory.
No, maybe not. I don't think so.
I think it's... I think it's in their best interest to keep that offense on the field as long as possible. I'm not saying that the defense is slow, but I'm saying that the defense, if you have a choice between a 4-minute drive and a 6-minute drive, I think the Patriots are going to take the 6-minute drive. They're going to score. They're going to want to score. I mean, the bottom line is obviously you want to score.
Well, that's my point.
Drive.
If you're at Jacksonville, you don't want them on the field for 10 minutes. You can't afford that
because
you're not a high strike. You're not a high powered, quick strike, explosive offense. They've got some nice weapons. Okay, they got Fred Taylor and Garrard's a nice quarterback. They're not going to score. They are who we thought they were. But they
who was there?
Hook.
Who was
Dennis
there
Green
Saturday
was in
night.
The press box.
Dennis Green was in Gillette Stadium on Saturday night.
I wanted to go up to him and make a crack, but he would have kicked my ass.
Dennis Green, I would have loved to have walked up to Dennis Green and talked to him. I didn't get a chance to. It would have been.
You should ask him. Hey, Dennis, who were the Bears? And just see where he goes with it. See if he'll take the bait.
See,
you know,
if he takes the bait and run. He was there. I wanted to talk to him because it would have been
fun. Well, actually, it would have been a good guy to talk to because he coached that record-setting offense in Minnesota in 98.
Well, not if you talk to Brian Billick. Brian Billick.
Oh, well, he is obviously he invented football. Brian
he was
Billick.
The one who invented the forward pass. If you talk to Brian Billick, long
I love it. But to get back to the point we were making, which I totally forgot now, if I'm Jacksonville, I need to be the one engineering the 10-minute drive.
Yeah.
I can't let New England's offense on the field, and I can't keep them on there for 10 minutes. So I got to mix up. Listen, you don't want to say it's a vanilla game plan, but I mean, mix in a QB, a cornerback blitz or something. Mm. Mix in a safety blitz. Do something. Give me a little something here. I'm falling asleep up in the press box watching this game. They're rushing four guys. I understand that's what they do, okay? And they're very similar to the Giants in the fact that they get most, if not all, of their pass rush from the front four. Not a lot of linebackers getting sacks. You look at San Diego, and Merriman and Phillips have about 30 sacks combined, right? Well, they get the pressure from their linebackers. That's who generates the pass rush. In Jacksonville, it's Spicer, it's Henderson, it's
the
front
four. All the guys
with
their hand on the ground.
Yes, it's the big guys up front. But still, you got to be able to switch things up. You got to have some versatility to play the Patriots. You cannot let Brady pick you apart underneath. He's going
to
kill you.
I think it's going to be interesting to see this week. These are not two wildly different teams, but two teams who are different in the sense that they bring pressure from different areas.
Yes, absolutely.
Talk about how Jacksonville gets the majority or got the majority of their pressure on the quarterback from their front four. The majority of San Diego's pressure comes from their linebackers.
Yeah.
In transitioning from having to face Jacksonville to having to face the San Diego defense, it's going to be interesting to see how they handle the different look. I'm not saying that they're not going to be able to do it, but it's going to be interesting to see how they go from one team to another and make those adjustments. I'd be willing to bet you that we're not going to see as much five wide or four wide as we saw in the Jacksonville game. You're probably going to keep a running back there.
You're
going
to have
or,
to, yeah.
You know, kind of Brady keep a running back in his back pocket there. He's the extra blocker. I'm willing to bet we're going to see Kevin Faulk take a lot more snaps in this game than he did in the first game because Kevin Faulk, for my money, is still the best running back when it comes to blitz pickup. So it's going to be interesting to see the ways that they try and neutralize, the ways that they try and slow down that San Diego pass rush.
Well, you can go back to last year's playoff game in San Diego, and I think that defense gave Brady some fits at times.
Mm-hmm.
Not enough, obviously, to pull out the win, and when they had to have it, the Patriots had it, and they got their touchdowns, they got their points. But there were some times in that game where they could not solve that D. The pass rush was getting in his face. They were getting some pressure. Now, I think this year the O-line's a lot stronger. I feel it's a more cohesive unit.
They are.
I think they've really gelled this year. They've really all come into their own this year, it seems like, at the same time. Like, they've all reached their peak this year.
One of the things that Dan Copen talked about during his press conference today was that. We asked him questions about, you know, developing continuity and developing consistency and being able to roll the same five, six, or seven guys out there. And I want to touch on that a little bit later on. We're supposed to hear some sound from him at the podium. I agree with you. I do think that the Patriots' offensive line is much better. It's much improved over last year. But at the same time, you still need that guy. You still, like, you know, we talked about having a running back, you know, tucked in Brady's back pocket.
Right.
You know, a guy who can serve as the last line of defense, especially in blitz pickup.
Well, I think Kyle Brady helps, though.
Kyle Brady definitely helps. And I don't think it was a coincidence that for the first time, they had a healthy Kyle Brady. They had a healthy right side of that offensive line. I don't think it was a coincidence that Lawrence Maroney had the night he did because that was the first time since December 3rd that they had their entire offensive line and Kyle Brady healthy and all playing at the same time.
Now, the bottom line is you can't say Jacksonville did what they wanted to do defensively. They came in and allowed almost 150-plus rushing yards to Maroney.
145 to the team, 122 to Maroney.
Okay, and 26 of 28 from Brady. That's a good defensive game plan?
Against this offense? Holding this offense? I'm not saying it's a
that,
great
that's an NFL record for efficiency by a quarterback.
Hey, look, against this offense.
And that's a drop and a non-call and pass interference. He was almost perfect.
Two catches. I agree with you there. The two incompletions could have been caught. I'm not saying it was a great game plan, but I'm saying under the circumstances, what they had to work with, the players they had to work with, the defense, and when you consider the offense they were going up against, a record-setting offense, to hold them to 31 points is not a bad job. I think they did as well as could be expected defensively under the circumstances on Saturday night. I'm not saying that they're a great defense, But at the same time, they're not, you know, we shouldn't be.
You have lowered expectations.
Well, no, I don't. I don't have lowered expectations. I don't have lowered expectations. Hey, I'm a Bears fan. Maybe I do have lowered expectations.
There you go. No, I understand. I think we're trying to say, what I'm trying to say is it's just a bad matchup.
It was a bad matchup for Jacksonville.
That's why we all thought it was a no-win situation.
Exactly. And I think they played better, actually. I think they played better than a lot of people expected them to play.
I think offensively they did.
Yeah.
I think Garrard played a lot better than I thought he would play.
Yeah.
But that game wasn't really, I don't want to say it was out of this world. We've seen him do that.
Yep, for
Garrard. I think some people didn't think he would do it against this team. I'm not sure why not. But
I didn't think he would do it against this team. I wrote a column on Friday. The Friday before the game, I wrote a column calling him noodle-armed.
Wow.
I said that he wasn't. I said if you stack the line and you force Garrard to beat you through the air, it's going to be a long night for Jacksonville.
You know, words hurt, Chris. You know, words hurt. You were wrong.
And all that. I was wrong.
I think
I was completely wrong.
This defense is not great. This is a very good defense.
The New England defense.
Yes.
Yes.
I think we have seen some quarterbacks have some pretty big games against them the last 4 or 5 weeks,
yes.
And we keep going back and saying it's the game of their life. Well, not everybody can have the game of their life. At some point, it's the defense, and it's not some guy playing out of his head. Can we agree on that?
Yes. I think that there are things, though, that you can look at on the defense that you can pinpoint that are, for lack of a better term, correctable.
Yeah, they can be corrected if you play better.
There's certain things that you can do that can improve your defense. I think this is a big week for the secondary.
Yes.
I'd like to see a better performance from the secondary. I'm intrigued to see the matchup if we're going to see more Randall Gay on Sunday as opposed to Ellis Hobbs. I want to know if that was a medical scratch because Hobbs wasn't at 100%. I want to know if it was a matchup thing. Maybe, you know.
You'll never find out.
Exactly. We'll never find out.
You're never going to know.
But these are the things. The secondary, I don't think, had a particularly good night.
No, they didn't play well
Saturday,
at all.
I don't think Rodney Harrison had a good night. You know, he dropped the interception, had two unnecessary, you know, had two bad penalties called against him. I think it was a bad night for the secondary in that regard, and I want to see how they'll be able to respond this week against San Diego. Now, San Diego's not a great passing team. They're a very good running team, but
it's almost the same. I don't want to say it's the same offense, but in terms of strengths and weaknesses, we're looking at back-to-back weeks now, two offenses with okay receivers. Mm-hmm. I would definitely give San Diego the edge. With Jackson and Chambers are probably better than any two that Jacksonville can roll out there.
Yes.
That's probably definitive to say. And plus, you throw in Gates. Okay, I shouldn't really have said that at all. I was obviously 100% wrong right there.
But I almost forgot about
Gates.
We don't know how healthy Gates is.
Well, that's true. The big toe injury, he was almost all of a decoy last week.
Yeah.
Really did not do anything at all. And they still came out with the win. But again, this is not a team where I would look at. It's not pass first, run second. Just like Jacksonville, this is run first, run to set up the pass.
Run first, run second, and then pass third.
Hey, I like that.
That's what I think it is. Even with the system that they've set up, LT is a great player. However, you can even plug in a player like Michael Turner or Darren Sproles, and you'll be able to get that same kind of success when it comes to running the football. Again, LT is obviously in his own special world.
Sure.
He's in his own universe, as far as I'm concerned. But the system is set up so that if you're a running back, you can plug a running back in. You can plug a moderately talented running back into that situation, and he'll enjoy success.
Sort of like Denver.
It's a little bit like Denver. I agree with you.
Built primarily on the offensive line and the scheme and the play calling.
Yes.
Well, you look at the backup. Look at Turner.
Yeah.
Now, here's a guy who's a Giants fan. When Tiki Barber retired, I wanted them to go after Michael Turner. I thought he would be a guy sort of like Chester Taylor was last year in Minnesota, a guy who was a career backup. Give him a chance to start, and you get him relatively cheap because of that, because he doesn't have the numbers to warrant a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the only thing with Turner was he was a restricted free agent, so it would have cost you a draft pick. So I can kind of see why the Giants backed off that a bit. But I would have loved to have seen Michael Turner in a Giant uniform. I think they're okay with what they have now. But, again, this is a great situation for the Chargers, because if Tomlinson's on 100%, I think Turner can do some damage. Obviously not to the same extent, but you're not going to have a complete drop-off where you're falling off a cliff here. You'll have some comparable talent backing it up. I think the Chargers can run the ball against this team.
I do too.
I think they can run it enough early to keep the game competitive. But again, like we've seen last week, the Patriots can take it away. They can adjust and take. They took it away from Jacksonville, and that was all she wrote.
I think that's going to be a particular key this week. is getting out to an early lead for this Patriots team. It's a key, obviously, every week, but you want to get up on them, and you want to take away that running game, and you want to make Phillip Rivers beat you. We talked about it last week against Jacksonville. Yes. Didn't turn out to be the case, but at the same time, I think it's even more so the case with San Diego. San Diego can beat you with a run, and if they get up on you, they can put together some long, sustained drives, and it's bad news for the defense. I agree with you. I do think that they can run the football on this team. One of the things, too, that's worth bringing up in the context of this conversation is red zone defense.
Yes.
The Patriots' red zone defense got better slightly toward the end of the year. They regressed a little bit against the Giants. I think the Giants cashed in on with touchdowns on all four of their scoring opportunities. They played a little bit better in the red zone against Jacksonville. Let's see how San Diego is when it comes to trying to finish off drives against this Patriots team. The Patriots team, and we'll bring this up too, for all the talk we've talked, for as much talk as we've given to the Jacksonville offense, the first two quarters, the Jacksonville offense played very well. The second two quarters, other than the Northcutt drop, I think the Patriots defense did a very good job, particularly in the red zone. Mm-hmm. They only held they held them to two field goals in the second half.
So that was the game. Yeah.
There were adjustments made at halftime. There were clear adjustments made at halftime. They did a much better job down the stretch. I want to see if they can keep that momentum going forward.
I'll tell you what we're going to do here. We've got some emails flooding in. We're going to get to those in a second. We have some more talk. I want to bring up the red zone factor again. What we're going to do real quickly is take a short break with our main man in the booth, Gary Gradecki. We're going to come back here on Patriot Playbook. Mike Ferenczi, Chris Price. We'll be back in a few.
When you've got a lineman-sized hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we gotta go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Let's go, Pats! Woo! Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo! And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
He's been a three-time champion, two-time Super Bowl MVP, and kicked off 2007 on a record pace.
Three touchdown passes in the first half.
Now, Tom Brady has signed official Patriots mini replica helmets, and you can get one free. Exclusively from the New England Patriots, this authentic mini helmet comes complete with chin strap, face mask, and Tom Brady's autograph. Perfect for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, pregame field passes, memorabilia, merchandise, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Tom Brady. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to those making a qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
All right, welcome back to Patriots Playbook. I'm your guest host, Mike Parenti, joined as always by my potato chip eating friend, Chris
what?
Price.
What? I'm not eating potato chips.
Sure you're not. I see that bag of kettle-cooked original Lay's. You can't beat the kettle-cooked. Those are like...
delicious.
Fried a third time and a fourth time.
Delicious.
Oh, they're not crispy enough? Put them in the fryer again. One more time. They should like they should like coat them in batter and just deep fry them like a fifth time.
We sports writers eat well, don't we?
Yeah.
Eat real well.
I don't know about you. I eat my muscle sandwiches every day, pal. All right. We've got a new friend in the booth, Big D. Danny. Take
what's
it
up,
over
guys?
Gary. What's
hey,
going
Dan.
On, man? We're going to call you Big D from now on. That's it.
Webradio at patriots.com. That's webradio at patriots.com.
That's
you
right.
Want to send us an email? Let us know what you think.
We've got a few here. I'm going to read a couple here. This is our buddy Andy in Vermont. Says, hey, Mike and Chris, welcome to Rook's show. Laugh out loud. I guess he thought that was funny. All right. He says, close? Maybe, but you take the injuries that the Bolts have, that will really make it a tough game for them to compete with the Patriots. No way the Pats defense plays as flat as Indy's. Look at the breaks they got. Reggie Whoops Wayne is no Harrison, and Harrison is not even Harrison anymore. Tipped balls falling into D lineman's arms, and Indy has never played well after a bye in the playoffs, and the Chargers always seem to play well versus the Colts.
As you say, tipped balls falling into to defensive backs.
Oh, they're showing that awful play.
We're watching the NFL Network. We have it here in the studio, and they're showing a replay of the San Diego Indy playoff game and Antonio Cromartie's first interception.
Which should have been a touchdown. They gave some phantom holding call. And North Turner had a right to be pissed because that was a terrible call. Who was the running back who botched the screen?
I don't know.
The backup.
It was.
I forget his name.
Kenton Keith.
Yeah, well,
yeah,
he should have been benched for that crap. That ball's got to be caught. Come on.
You
feel bad because, you know, they're going to put this on Manning. And people are going to say, oh, you know, it's back to the old Peyton Manning who can't win in the playoffs. That game was not his fault.
Those are fluky plays. Those are odd plays. It'd be one thing if Brady had a bunch of tipped passes this year. It'd be one thing if Brady struggled in that department.
Yeah.
There's no reason to think that the same thing is going to happen against Brady. Yeah, we're just seeing it now.
That's the wrong play now. See, that wasn't the play at the goal line. I'm sorry. That was the interception before the end of the half where Manning overthrew his receiver.
At the end,
tip ball was the third quarter. But the point stands.
That was still a tip ball, though, right here. This was another.
Oh, right. I'm thinking of the one where he threw the screen at the goal line. That was a great play by Cromartie. They just had Mike Pereira on there try to explain the screw job given to the Colts there, which they should have had a touchdown. Anyway, listen. I wanted to bring something up because the emailer Andy mentions Marvin Harrison. What a complete dog. What a dog. He didn't even get hit on that play, Chris. He got hit at the legs and he flipped and he lost the ball.
He's not
when
a
I
dog.
Heard it on the radio, they made it seem like he got clobbered, like he got Rodney Harrison.
No, I
and got knocked
gotta,
out.
I gotta take exception.
I'm sorry, he should have held
on
to that ball.
No, Marvin Harrison.
He's soft.
No, Marvin
he's
Harrison's
soft.
Not soft. Marvin, hey, you put Marvin
he's
Harrison
tissue.
On this Patriots, you put Marvin Harrison on the Giants.
Marvin
no, Marvin Harrison's had a great career.
He's had a great career.
Marvin Harrison's had a great career.
Catching and falling.
The first catching and game falling. Back, the first game back after injury, I'm willing to cut him a little break. I'm willing to cut him a
what
little
break. What the hell does that have to do with holding onto the ball?
It's,
that's got
it,
nothing
it,
to do with ball
no,
security
but,
at
no,
all.
No, but it's just getting back into the flow of the game.
He cost
if I'm a
the
Colts
game.
Fan, if I'm a Colts fan, I would have liked to have seen Marvin Harrison come back maybe a game or two before that. Or sit out the entire season.
Sit out then. Don't come back if you're not going to play.
But I don't think Marvin Harrison's a dog.
I think he is soft. I think he's always been soft. He's a great receiver. Does not go for yards after the catch. Catches the ball, gets hit, drops, goes down. That's him. He's like the Eric Dickerson of wide receivers.
Never no, Eric Dickerson was a great running back.
He was soft too.
Eric Dickerson was
Darryl,
a great
you're
running
soft
back.
Too.
Come on.
But come on, that
come
play
on.
Was big though, Chris.
That play,
you know
that play
they,
was big.
They
that
were,
play
they
was
were
big.
Driving again. And they're about to pound it down their throats again. They could have been up 14-0, whole different game.
That play was big. I agree with you on that. But to call Marvin Harrison a dog
I'm calling him a dog.
That's okay.
So this game, Manning is like the fifth guy I blame in that loss. And actually, no, the 13th because I throw all 11 defenders because the defense sucked in that game.
Yeah.
But I gotta say this, I've only watched two Colt games, in from start to finish all year. I watched a game against New England in November. And I watched this past Sunday, the AFC divisional playoff game. And in both games, the Colts were terrible in the red zone. Absolutely terrible. Now,
at finishing off drives.
Has that been a problem all year for them?
I don't know. I watched those two games. I also watched the Sunday night game.
Okay.
The Colts Chargers game.
Yes.
The one that the first one that the Chargers
and
won.
And that was a freak show.
That was a freak show as well. And again, Peyton Manning ended up throwing, I think, 5 picks in that one. I agree with you there too. I don't think that game was Peyton's fault as well.
There was some great plays by the Charger D-backs in that game. Yep. Some of those interceptions were just like godlike. You couldn't even really blame him for them.
Mm-hmm.
I can't blame him too much for the loss on Sunday. I'll put more blame on Dungy, because that team is now under Dungy, 0-4 in the playoffs coming out of the bye week.
What the hell are they doing? That's a focus thing right there.
Yeah. That's on the coach.
I agree with you. Once or twice, you'd start to say, well, you know, it's a bit, you know,
no, it's not.
4 times, that's a definite trend. That's something
they get
that you
this
need to
bye,
look at.
They clinch the bye early, and they treat the last 2 weeks like Club Med. Guys are drinking daiquiris in the sideline and having a good time and tanning. Getting their backs waxed.
I don't know if they're drinking daiquiris on the sideline.
But they're not playing, and they're not focusing on football, and they're getting rusty.
And you juxtapose that
with
what? Thank you. When you juxtapose that with how the Patriots treated the last 3 to 4 weeks of the season. Now, granted, the Patriots were under more pressure because
they were playing for something.
They were going for that undefeated season. But it just speaks to the preparation of the two teams. I have a feeling that if the Patriots were still 13-1 going into the last 2 weeks of the season, chances are pretty good that they still would have run the starters out there for the bulk of the game. They would have
because they've done it before.
Exactly. They wouldn't have done what the Colts did. They wouldn't have treated it like the Colts did. They wouldn't have treated the last 2 weeks, you know, your term, like Club Med.
Go back to, I want to say, 0-4, the finale against San Fran. They'd already locked in the 1 or 2 seed that year.
They still had the starters.
Had nothing to play for. They had a bye, and they played their starters.
Not a great game.
You don't need more than 2 weeks off.
Not a great game.
No,
but
that was a snooze fest.
You needed to keep your foot on the gas heading into the postseason, especially at that time.
You don't need more than a week. That bye is enough.
Any post-Thanksgiving game, as far as I'm concerned, you need to be cresting as you move toward the playoffs.
Yeah.
And every time you get your start, every time you can get your starters out there after Thanksgiving, I think you need to do that.
That's why I can't believe people are actually arguing this toward the end of the season. What should they do? Are you kidding me?
Well, they were concerned about, you know, the starters getting,
listen,
you know,
A rogue linebacker taking
on Tom Brady's knees.
You can get hurt sleepwalking and walking into a glass coffee table. That's happened before to professional athletes. You can burn yourself in a tanning booth falling asleep. Baseball player did that for the Orioles. You can get hurt anywhere. You can get hurt in any game. You got to do what's best for the team. And playing and staying sharp is what's best for every team.
Let's get back to the emails. Webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. I know we got a couple more up there.
Yeah, let's see. Scott from D.C. writes us and says, I went to the Patriots at Packers game last year, and I have to say that was one of the best road trips ever. I got to see, quote-unquote, away Patriots game at least once a year for the past 6 years or so, including Buffalo, Carolina, Cleveland, the Meadowlands, and Washington and Baltimore. But that trip to Green Bay was the best by far. It was freezing cold at the tailgate, but oddly, with the sun shining, it was actually warm in the bowl of the stadium itself. The fans were amazing, just a ton of fun and very enjoyable, even though we were wearing Patriots gear. They were very nice people. The stadium, too, is just great. Great steaks at Lombardi's the night before the game. All right. They had it all.
Plug in for Lombardi's there.
I have a very high opinion of the whole Packers experience. That said, if Favre gets to the Super Bowl this year, like you said, the slobbering coverage will be simply unwatchable for 2 weeks. I like Favre, but come on, it will be obscene.
Fans, you'd be well advised to
turn off your TVs.
Turn off the internet. Turn off the sports talk, because that's all it's going to be.
Sorry.
Come
on now.
That probably wouldn't be a bad
idea.
Did you watch the
Packers Seahawks game?
Yeah.
During the postgame
interview?
Exactly.
We talked about this. Exactly.
He was hovering behind, waiting for his chance to speak to Brett and hold his hand.
Brett Favre is talking. For those of you who didn't see it, Brett Favre is on the field talking to a reporter from Fox.
Pam Oliver, maybe
one of their other sideline reporters, talking about the game, breaking down the game, and hovering over Brett Favre's, I think his right shoulder in the background, is guess who? Peter King.
I think he was blowing his ear. I don't know for sure. He might have been nibbling on the lobe.
He had a cup of hot cocoa waiting for him.
Oh, that's cute. Some chunky soup.
Exactly.
And Donovan McNabb's mom was next to him with a little bowl of chunky soup.
So I think you'd be well advised, as this emailer points out, you know, it's going to be 2 weeks of Brett Favre worship.
But I want to watch Brett Favre.
There you go.
Scott also wants to he wants to know if he should be worried about this game. He's a little concerned about the defense.
No. Well, you know, it's the AFC
Championship. I'm concerned about the defense. I'm not worried about the game, though.
It's the AFC Championship game. You should always be worried about the game, because if you lose, you go home, the season's over.
Well,
but at the same time, I don't think that there is as much to be concerned about as you might think. I think there are some legitimate concerns about the defense, about stopping the run, about trying to contain Tomlinson, Sproles, Turner, whoever it is. But I don't think in the grand scheme of things you should be concerned.
Well, it depends on your definition of concern.
Yeah.
Listen, I would put it this way. As long as the offense can bail them out, they're fine.
Exactly.
If the offense has an off day, it's going to be a ball game.
There's no reason to think that the offense won't be able to bail them out.
Because no one has stopped them all year.
No one has stopped them.
They're an unstoppable
force. I don't know if anyone can.
The immovable object meets the unstoppable force.
I think one of the things that you need to look for, though, on the offensive side of the ball is this team does takeaways better than anyone else in the NFL.
Yeah.
I think that's the one thing offensively that if something weird happens early, if Brady gets stripped and they run it back and there's a, you know, kind of a fluky special teams play, then I think you can be concerned.
Well, that would classify as an off day for the offense.
If they're turning
the ball over, then that's an off day.
Yeah. The way things are, exactly, you know, I wrote this earlier in the week in the Metro. It's literally the immovable force meets the unstoppable, irresistible, whatever it is.
Yeah.
The irresistible force.
You stole my line.
The immovable object.
That's not even my line.
Well, whatever it is. When those two forces collide, because it's literally the Patriots are the best at ball security and the Chargers are the best at taking the ball away. And so whoever wins the turnover battle in this game is going to win this game.
Absolutely.
Most likely.
Most, just like every other game in the NFL, it seems. And certainly when the Chargers do win the turnover battle, they are tough to beat. Which is why they've won 8 or now 9, 10 in a row?
You know, when Cromartie has at least one, I think it's 8. Okay. But when Cromartie gets at least one pick, they're 7-0.
Ooh.
So that pretty much tells the tale of the game.
Stat nerd.
Well, you know.
Okay, another email. Dave from Abingdon, Virginia. Is that correct? Abingdon?
I think that sounds about right.
Dave would know. He lives there.
Or
right?
Arlington, maybe.
No, I think he would not have botched Arlington with 5 misspelled letters. Anyway, he says, howdy. I listen a lot because it is all the Patriots I can get here. And this is the first time I've heard you guys. Well, thanks for listening, Dave.
Thank you, Dave.
I wonder what you two think of Maroney. I have been on Maroney's side all year, and John and the PFW guys think he stinks. Well, the PFW guys think everybody stinks.
I love talking about Maroney. I really do. I love talking about Maroney because Maroney really, for me, is, and I think for a lot of Patriots fans, is the most polarizing figure on this team.
An enigma.
Enigma, exactly. Yeah. Guys who've covered this team, guys who've covered him for the 2 years that he's been in this league, I don't think that most of us understand him. I don't think that most of us get him. There are two schools of thought on Maroney, that he is either a bust, a washout who can't run the football and has had trouble running the football in the past when he's been asked to be the number one back, or he's a guy who just hasn't gotten enough touches yet to be comfortable in the NFL. I go back and forth on this week to week. I got to be honest with you.
Yeah,
I will
no,
say
I,
this.
I agree.
His performance lately, I think, can be tied back to a few things, most notably the fact that the offensive line, for the first time all year, is healthy and consistent and together. And again, Kyle Brady is out there, your number one blocking tight end, and he, for the first time all year, is able to put together a few games. He's been healthy most of the season so far, but what's the look on your face?
I got some pop-up, and like it just chimed in loud and says, AFC trophy presentation, location, conference room.
Oh,
today at 3 p.m.
It's a reminder.
Okay. Oh.
They're already giving out the trophy already?
Don't let the Chargers.
Don't show up to the game.
Don't let the Chargers see
the trophy's here. Somebody email the Chargers and tell them the Patriots are presenting the trophy to themselves at 3 o'clock in their conference room. I'm sorry. Go on.
I know Maroney for me is a fascinating figure. I go back and forth every week on Maroney, but I will say this. I think the recent uptick in his numbers can be tied to a number of things. For several reasons, not the least of which the offensive line and Kyle Brady are healthy and putting together extended snaps for the first time all year.
I agree. I think, and like everything else, the running game is a byproduct of so many different facets. You have to have the blocking, the protection, the scheme, the situation, and obviously the running back has to do his job as well. I think it's encouraging over the last couple of weeks to see him run so hard and run so well. I think that's a real big deal. And I think that's good going forward. And even if, you know, whatever happens in the playoffs in these next two games, it's irrelevant. I think going forward, he needs that to build something, at least to take with him in the offseason going into the following year. I don't think he's a bust. I think you cannot call a guy a bust. It hasn't even been two full seasons here. I don't think he's put it all together yet, obviously. I think that's clear. That's probably the safe approach to everything. And I think what you need to see more of is him as the every down back. And again, he split the carries with Barber in college at Minnesota, Marion Barber. And you see now Marion Barber starting to come into his home as an every down back.
But
so
first,
it takes some time.
First half of this year, too, I mean, he was basically splitting carries. Actually, Morris was getting more carries than he was through the first six games of the season before Morris got hurt. I wonder how that figures into it. I wonder with him if he has what it takes to be the number one featured back in the National Football
League. I think we need another year.
If he's going to be the guy who you can hand the ball off to 350 times, I don't know if he's ever going to be that guy. One of the smartest things that I've ever heard in an NFL locker room was what Anthony Pleasant said, is that you can't measure guys instantly. You can't measure guys after their first year, after the second year. You need three full years of watching a guy compete at the highest level to determine whether or not he can be a long-term contributor in the National Football League. And so I think if we get to the end of next season and there's still questions about Maroney, then I think it might be time to move on him and make decisions. But again, I go back and forth on him. You know, he did a great job on Saturday night. You know, he moved the chains. He did exactly what they asked him to do.
Well, he runs kept hard. Going. He runs hard. He's powerful, but there are times when he runs like a scat back, and he's dancing more than MC Hammer back there in the behind the line of scrimmage, doing that typewriter thing from side to side. That's how he runs. He's running east to west sometimes, and he's not picking up the necessary yardage. That can be frustrating if you're a fan, coach, teammate, whatever the case may be. You just need to see more consistency.
Did you see Inside the NFL this week?
I did not. I missed my boy Chris Carter on the set.
Someone referred this to me earlier today, and I just have a real quick story. They did a piece where they followed around Bob Kraft for the day.
Oh, boy.
On Saturday. They followed him, and they followed him to the stadium, and they had him mic'd up. And after
what the
Maroney
hell likes Bob Kraft.
Well, it's just one of those NFL films features, and you know,
like a player,
they're able to get some interesting kind of an offbeat angle, and so they followed Bob Kraft, and then they had him mic'd for the game. And after one Lawrence Maroney run, he turned to someone in the box with him and said, "Wow, looks like he's really running with purpose now." And so even, you should know this, even Lawrence, you know, everyone has an opinion on Lawrence Maroney, even the owner. Even
signing his paycheck.
Exactly.
So
but just know, whoever, I forget the emailer's name.
Oh, Dave. Buddy Dave.
Dave, just know that everyone in this organization has an opinion one way or another on Lawrence Maroney. I always go back and forth on him. I think maybe he started to turn the corner after he found diapers in his locker midway through the season. I think that might play a role. I think the fact that the offensive line is now healthy and together and complete for the first time in a long time, I think that might play a role. I agree with your take that a successful running game is the byproduct of an awful lot of other areas.
Thanks for the diaper analogy, because now I'm going to have 2 weeks of Super Bowl coverage and sidebars on diapers and Pampers. Thanks.
In his locker.
You know, I remember one time Fox mic'd up Joe Torre during a Yankee-Red Sox game, and it was just a while ago. And this is at Fenway Park, and Paul O'Neill hits a home run into the monster seats, and he's like, "That's how the effing worm turns!" And he dropped an F-bomb on national TV. Oh, it was great.
That's fantastic.
It's the last time they mic'd anybody in the Yankee dugout. Anyway. We're watching a little bit of Bill Belichick on the TVs and the monitors. We saw a little bit of the Giants press conference as well. Michael Strahan and Sean O'Hara out there. I want to touch on that game a little bit, because we got another email about Favre, and our buddy Dave actually emailed us back and says, "Patriots undefeated or Brett Favre? They will do both. It is also Patriots worship."
But you know, it's not, I disagree.
You disagree with that?
I think nationally, I think the full body massage that the national media will give to Brett Favre for those 2 weeks will far outweigh any sort of love that the Patriots get from the national media.
You're going to have to read about his pill addiction.
You're going to have to read about everything. You're going to read about everything. You're going to see everything. The ESPN Classic is going to run the Sports Century with Brett Favre over and over and over again. We're going to see trips back home to Mississippi. We're going to see his growth. We're going to see him in the first Super Bowl against the Patriots, Super Bowl 31, where he took out where he threw the touchdown pass to start the game and took off the helmet.
Oh, took off the helmet and ran.
We're
going to
see that time and time again. That's what it's going to be.
Jeans ad? What, Bugle Boy jeans? Is that what he does, or is it Lee jeans?
I think it's Wrangler.
Is it Wrangler?
Wrangler.
He's a Wrangler kind of guy.
Yeah.
He had his old beat-up pickup truck in Mississippi playing some football in the weeds.
Yeah, but that's what it's going to be.
That's what Brett Favre does.
That's what it's going to be. It's going to be 2 weeks of, if that happens, if it's the Patriots and the Packers, it's going to be 2 weeks of just
the tail of the tape. Brett Favre is a man's man. He wears Wrangler jeans. Tom Brady carries around a dog purse.
Boring!
That's what we're going to get.
It's
absolutely
exactly
right. It is going to be a snooze fest for 2 weeks.
It's going to be real man Brett Favre against Stetson man Tom Brady. It's going to it's going to be
Stetson man, huh?
Yeah.
Anybody use the Stetson anymore?
Well, Tom Brady does.
You don't know that for sure.
I don't know that for sure, but he's getting a lot of money to tell people he does.
I wouldn't even use it. I would have no problem endorsing a product and not using it.
How did we get this far that we're talking about Stetson? Webradio@patriots.com. Webradio@patriots.com. Send us an email. Let us know what you think.
In all honesty here, do the Giants have a chance in the NFC title game?
I think they have a chance.
Okay.
I think with that pass rush, I definitely think they have a chance. But the Packers at home, the way they're playing, you know, you can talk about Favre all you want, but they're getting great production out of that running game.
Oh, Ryan Grant's a monster.
Exactly.
Right now.
They're getting guys, you know, the guys around Favre are playing well. And they're playing well enough to win. But I'll give the Giants a puncher's chance, yeah.
I have a big problem, and my problem is with Tom Coughlin, okay? I'm not your typical Giant fan that's in love with Coughlin all of a sudden because he's won two playoff games. I had a big problem Sunday in the first quarter. Giants scored first, got the ball back immediately, and then faced a 4th-and-1 at about the Cowboy 42, 43-yard line, and they punted. And I'm swearing at the TV. I'm going nuts. I almost had an aneurysm in the living room. I mean, I was gonna pass out. I was pissed.
I said, you gotta
be kidding me. You're gonna punt here? The Patriots would go for that 100 times. 100 times. And they'd run the same freaking play with a Brady sneak and they get 7 yards out of it every single time. How do you not? You're running the ball down their throats at that point. Dallas cannot stop you. You get that first down, you go and you score again, it's 14-0, the whole game changes.
You want to be able to keep...
Be the aggressor!
You want to be able to keep them down. You want to be able to keep that momentum going in your direction.
I
agree.
Balls, you know? I mean, that was a gutless call.
Where was the ball again?
Yeah, about the 42.
The
I could be wrong.
42?
Yeah, I mean, I could be wrong. Maybe it was around midfield, enough to the point where, it's not a terrible... It's not like you're at your own 20.
Yeah.
I'm not asking you to do something stupid here. All right, another reminder, 5 minutes, trophy presentation, guys. We're going to cut out of here for the 5 minutes.
Don't
let the
Chargers hear about that, man.
This may be, you know, these guys are really obnoxious about this stuff.
5 minutes.
All right, I get it. The presentation's at 3 o'clock, everybody, all right? I get it. But Coughlin, I mean, be aggressive. And please,
in that situation,
on Sunday,
that would call for
an aggressive
move.
You have Brandon Jacobs, you've got Bradshaw,
you've got Madison Hedgecock. Madison Hedgecock is his name?
Calm down.
That's a great football name.
You've got guys to get a yard.
Yeah.
Give the ball to Jacobs and let him breathe. Fall forward.
Just lean forward, yeah.
You get the yard. I just didn't like it because and now listen, Fiegels did a nice job on the punt. He pinned him back at the 5 or the 4. Then Dallas marched 96 yards and scored. See, the key for the Giants in that game, Dallas ran a 10.5-minute drive in the second quarter in which I almost pulled every last remaining hair in my head, by the way.
I couldn't watch every
third down conversion. It was 3rd-and-7, 3rd-and-8, 3rd-and-90, and they're running screens. They're completing every third down imaginable. They're keeping the ball moving. No pressure whatsoever on the passer. They take the lead. You're thinking, okay, wow, that's deflating. Giants come down in 50 seconds and score to match it.
Here
you go, guys. Took you 10.5 minutes. It took us a minute. And I think that really, even though Dallas briefly led again, I just think that was somewhat deflating for the Cowboys to not be able to hold that lead going into the half. Manning ran a great 2-minute drill, tied the game. The rest is history. But please, show some sack on Sunday. If it's 4th-and-1 and you're in Packer territory, hand off the damn ball to Jacobs. Please.
Or just
please.
Lean forward. If the Patriots have taught us anything, is that when it's 4th-and-inches, 4th-and-1, you know, just let Brady take over. Just run in. Just tuck yourself behind that big left guard and just kind of lean forward. Just get that extra yard.
Like I told the PFW guys during the crossover, the last three defensive series for the Giants, brilliant. I think they finally wore down that Cowboy offensive line. Because you got to give Dallas some credit. They got a real strong O-line.
Big.
But the pass rush for the Giants can be, it's at times unstoppable. And it's relentless. That's the word. It's relentless. They're not going to give up. And they finally broke through. They need to do that earlier against Favre. They cannot wait 3.5 quarters to finally figure out how to get to the quarterback. because I think Favre will make you pay more than Romo will.
That's true.
Nothing against Romo, but he's no Brett Favre. I have seen Brett Favre, and you, sir.
And you, sir, you are no Brett Favre.
Instead of taking a break, what we're going to do now is we're going to replay a little bit of an interview this afternoon that the PFW boys had with Mercury Morris. In case you haven't heard enough Mercury Morris already,
get ready for an irritating Mercury Morris interview.
Let's take it over now.
Mercury Morris.
Our buddy Big D's going to kick it over to Mercury Morris.
On the phone right now is Mercury Morris. Mercury, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. How about you guys?
Hey, good. First of all, thank you for taking the time to come on our show.
And putting up with our amateurish host.
Right, sorry about that.
That's all right. You know, I'm watching the Weather Channel, and as far, you know, it's 79 right here, and the sun is shining, and I realized that up there they were showing the parts of what the game was going to be like. The guy says, do you wish you were playing now? I wouldn't want to be playing now if I was on either team. It's so cold up there.
No kidding. Hey, you know, Mercury, here's a question I wanted to ask you right off the top. When you guys played, you finish the regular season undefeated, 14-0, and then you go into the playoffs. Did that add any pressure to those playoff games than there already was?
Nah, you know why? Because throughout the whole thing, and this is, I think, that was our advantage, and it's not an advantage for the Patriots now, but they can make it an advantage. We were not favored, see. You have to understand that we finished the season unbeaten, and we were the third team, I believe, to finish the regular season unbeaten, the 34 Bears, then the 42 Bears, and then us. Unfortunately, those two went down in flames in the championship. But we didn't have any pressure because we were still concerned about what happened the year before when we lost in Super Bowl VI. And by the way, I returned out of the two out of the three kickoffs I returned against New England, one in 1970 and the other in 1971. But in the 71 season, we played up in New England and we lost. We got beat by the Patriots up there our Super Bowl year in 1971. But the point is that there was no pressure on us because this had never been done before. So nobody had any expectations about someone going unbeaten or undefeated. So you had that human nature effect where people thought, this is not going to happen. It'll never happen again. So we go through the season, number one in offense. When the season ended, the regular season, we were number one in offense, number one in defense, number one in special teams, fewest giveaways, most takeaways, least penalized. We scored the most points. We gave up the least. We had a three-back offense. We ran 7 out of every 10 times. 2,000-yard rushers, the first in history. We broke the NFL team rushing record for that single season, finishing 40 yards short of 3,000 yards rushing in a 14-game season. We lost our starting quarterback for 11 weeks, and we played 16 straight games, and we played the AFC Championship on the road. And then after all of that, we were underdogs in the Super Bowl. And the irony is that the Washington Redskins were favored by 3 points. The three teams they lost to in 1972, the Dallas Cowboys, Buffalo Bills, and the New England Patriots. So we did not have any pressure as far as we were concerned. It was all self-implemented because we knew that when we came back that year after 71, Shula made us watch that game where we got our butts handed to us by the Cowboys, and he said, now, you see how sick and sorry you feel now? Well, just think of how sick and sorry you're going to be if you don't go back and redeem yourselves for what you did the year before. So I say all that to say that we had our report cards from the year before in our back pocket. So it wasn't about the forwardness of what we were about to accomplish. It was about getting that F off of our report card from the year before. That's why there was no pressure on us. And ironically, because nobody believed that we would do it. Imagine now that the Patriots, as successful as they've been, and the only other team has been that successful has been us in the last 1,290 tries and 35 years.
Not that you've been counting.
Of course. They've done a great thing, man. And as quiet as it's kept, you know, I talk a lot of smack in the beginning of this, but as it gets closer to the reality of who these guys are, they're playing the type of football that only comes around once every 35 years.
So, Mercury, obviously you're talking to a very much Patriots audience right now. When you watch them, and, for example, last week against the Jaguars, what's your emotional state? Are you openly and excitedly rooting against them? You see Tom Brady get sacked on the first play of the game.
You know why? Nope, because I don't want what happens to the Patriots to have affected me. Nothing that the Patriots do at this point is going to change anything that we did. This is a fraternity, and we're the founding chapter of this fraternity. We've had no members because the criteria is you got to go unbeaten throughout the season. So these guys represent the first time in 35 years that someone has risen to the capability to be able to do this. And this is modern day football now. When I played, I came into the league in 69 with the AFL, and the teammates that I had back then, Bill Stanfill, Jake Scott, a lot of other guys who went to Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, LSU. Well, back then in 65 through 69, the year I came out, there were no blacks that played at those schools. So the game back then reflected society. Now the game reflects the necessity of the importance of competition from the high school to college to pros.
Hey, Mercury, let me ask you a question. Now, obviously, yeah. It's hard to compare teams from different eras and all that because of size and speed. But just with personnel and game planning and coaching, mm-hmm. Tell me why you think your Dolphins would beat this Patriots team.
Well, in the first place, I don't really do that because I can't compare what would happen then because that's made up. There's no way that we can play them. There's no way that we can match up with who they are.
Do you think you're better than them? Do you think that your Dolphins team is better than this Patriots team?
I can't say that because, number one, we'll never have a chance to play. See, anybody can talk a good game in the locker room. But when you put your cleats on, you get your ankles taped, you put your pads in your pants, and you get your butt out there on the field, then we see what your game looks like. The only way this could happen is through Madden country. And so the reality is that you got to look at what the Patriots did with the people that are around them now. How did they fare across the league? The league average of what the Patriots' success was, and then what the Patriots' success is versus what the league averages are now. That's where we did in our comparison, and that's how we're really different than you guys. We ran 7 out of every 10 times. When it was 3rd and 5, we run. 3rd and 6, we run. Now, 3rd and 3, certain instances now, the league itself thinks that the pass is maybe the best way to go. So it's indicative of the changes in the game. We didn't have the kind of exciting big-time receivers and this stable of people that have come out to strictly to play professional football. Our guys came out, if you walked into a game back in the early 70s, the fans didn't look too much different than the players. So when you have this participator-spectator concept where we walked in the Orange Bowl, there were no suites there where you could go up on the mezzanine and get steak tartare while you're entertaining people. It was just to go and watch the match because it was us against them. Now it's a different circumstance, and people are being bombarded with entertainment. And in the midst of that, the Patriots have come out almost like we did back then, where they've excelled out of their ability to do that because they're talented and because they have a great coach. We have a great coach, which it showed up in what we did. If we were number one in everything, and that means everything team-wise, and we accomplished everything that you could have possibly accomplished, including winning the Super Bowl. In our era, we clearly are the number one team, simply because of the statistics that you put up. If you're number one in offense, number one in defense, number one in special teams, fewest giveaways, most takeaways, least penalized, hey, then why would you not be at the top? My thing is that the Patriots have a different type of game, but they're clearly at the top of their game and at the top of this league. I've never seen anything like it, obviously, because the last time it was like this is 1972.
Well, Mercury, we really appreciate you coming on. I was talking to a couple of the Patriots, and they said they were driving around your neighborhood, and they're really thinking about moving in. They got a nice plot of land picked out, and they're going to build a huge mansion.
Hey, you tell them, you know what, I'm going to have my Mr. Rogers sweater on saying, with my cookies that I've been baked since 1973, saying, I had them in the freezer, but they're still good.
All right, Mercury Morris, thank you so much for taking the time.
All right, man.
Great stuff. All right.
When you've got a lineman-sized hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. And hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we gotta go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Let's go, Pats! Woo! Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats! Woo!
And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
He's been a three-time champion, two-time Super Bowl MVP, and kicked off 2007 on a record pace.
Three touchdown passes in the first half.
Now Tom Brady has signed official Patriots mini replica helmets, and you can get one free exclusively from the New England Patriots. This authentic mini helmet comes complete with chin strap, face mask, and Tom Brady's autograph. Perfect for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, pregame field passes, memorabilia, merchandise, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Tom Brady. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to those making a qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
All right, welcome back to Patriots Playbook. Chris Price's favorite song playing over the loudspeakers as we rejoin you.
There was a great moment today during the press conference when someone asked Belichick about what he thought about the San Diego Supercharger song.
Yeah.
And he said, I hate that song.
Like on Major League?
Yeah, exactly. Well,
without the expletive?
He didn't use the expletive. That's correct. He did not use the expletive. It would have been a lot funnier if he did. But he recalled a time when he went out there with the Giants and they played the song time after time. And I think we're going to listen to him a little bit later, but he said, you know, they weren't done scoring. They played the song and then they scored again.
So ridiculous.
He said he had that song careening around in his head.
Oh, is this like one of his stories where he tells you that the lead was like 55-3 at the half, and the next day we were down 60-0 at
it's
the half.
Close, yeah. We were down
70-5 at the half.
Yeah, the stories get taller.
I bet when Bill, you know, I love how Bill, you know, just talks up opponents. He must have been the ladies' man in college. Like, you're the most beautiful girl I've ever seen, baby. You're my number one. I bet you say that to all the girls, Bill.
He always puts me in the mind of
when
he's building up that opponent like that. He always puts me in the mind of, you remember the old Saturday Night Live routine, Bill Brasky?
Yeah.
Where Bill Brasky was this 10-foot-tall man mountain who would eat small children for breakfast, lunch, and, you know, that's the image that I always get from you know, whoever the Patriots opponent's going to be that week. My favorite story along those lines is back in 2001 where they were facing the 1-14 Carolina Panthers going into the last week of the season. And he spent all week talking about how great the Panthers were and how explosive they were and how they could do so many different things. And
they're really good on special teams.
Yeah, exactly.
Which they should be because they punt 30 times a game because they're 1-14.
But he's genius, though, on his part, because it gets the focus off of his team.
Yeah.
He never talks about his own team when he comes out and delivers his opening statement. It's always about the other team. It gets the focus on the other team. It gets questions about the other team going, and it makes it tougher for us to do our job, but no one cares about that.
You can't help but laugh.
I mean,
it really is funny at this point. I know a lot of people.
Exactly. Thank you, Big D. It is what it is.
I mean, we've been writers for years covering this team. It doesn't really faze me anymore. It's just funny.
It is.
It is funny.
He's
going to
do. He's going to do what he's going to do. But again, no one likes to hear sports. No one likes to hear sports writers complain about their job.
No.
Look, you know, we could be out digging ditches for a living. You know, so you know, in the grand scheme of things,
our ditches need to be dug at some point.
Our jobs are not all that tough. But you know what though, no one cares if we complain about something. So. The less said about that, the better.
Yeah, I agree.
Webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. Give us a call. Give us an email, actually, and let us know what you think.
Let me ask you, what did you think of Mercury Morris?
I love me some Mercury Morris. I never get tired of listening to Mercury Morris.
I needed more. That wasn't enough for me.
I always wonder about this. Looking forward 35 years from now, let's say the Patriots win the AFC Championship, win the Super Bowl, complete the perfect season, go 19-0. 35 years from now, the next time we see a team do this, which one of the Patriots is going to be Mercury Morris? Which one of the Patriots is going to be the go-to guy for ESPN and Fox Sports and every local affiliate to basically pop off and tell you how great the Patriots were way back when, they couldn't hold our jock, blah, blah, blah. Which one of the guys on this team right now is going to be that generation's Mercury Morris?
That's a great question. That's a great question.
Let's ask our emailers. Yes. Send us an email. Let us know who Mercury Morris, the next generation's Mercury Morris, is going to be. Webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. We have a couple of ideas as to who it
might
be.
Yeah, we floated around a few during the Mercury Morris interview. You brought up Ellis Hobbs.
Ellis loves to talk.
Ellis,
God bless him.
He's never met a microphone he does not like.
God bless him. Ellis loves to talk. It makes our job a lot easier. And I think I could see Ellis being that guy. 35 years from now, talking about how great this Patriots team was and reminding everyone about how great this Patriots team was.
How about Matt Light? Funny guy.
You know, funny guy.
Good in front of the camera.
Good with a sound bite, you know, a quick quip.
And that's what you want. That's sound bites.
Exactly.
It's not really all about the print media at this point because you're going to have, and who knows what kind of shows we're going to have on 35 years from now.
We'll all be flying around jetpacks 35 years from now.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to be in hovercrafts.
I think the other guy that you could probably point to 35 years from now as being a go-to guy for the media might be Dante Stallworth. Dante Stallworth is a very funny guy. He's got this whole alter ego Nico thing that's kind of blown up over the last couple of days on the internet. You know, we knew about this way back in training camp. But I think he might be one of those guys. I think he might be one of those go-to guys for the media 35 years from now, reminding folks of the greatness of the 2007 New England Patriots. It's a question that intrigues me. Who do you have a couple other names? I know you mentioned Matt Light. We talked about Stallworth. We talked about Ellis Hobbs.
This is tough.
Roosevelt Colvin.
I was just going to say Roosevelt Colvin.
You might toss him into the mix as well. He's very good.
David Kirkland. Lawrence Maroney.
Lawrence Maroney.
Our buddy Dave from, where is this again?
Hey, this is Lawrence Maroney.
Abingdon.
AKA Kool-Aid, AKA L Dot, AKA L Train. Step your game up, player.
See?
L Dot. I haven't heard him referred to as L Dot before.
Our buddy Lambo chimes in and says, number one, a gray-haired, pot-bellied Randy Moss, who was one of the first
guys
I brought
up. That was one of the, See, Moss is not a great media guy. I mean, he talked yesterday, and that was great. We can talk more about that incident, too, if we want to talk about going down the road. But
cash money, homie.
He's pretty
good. Funny.
He is, you know what, though? When he talks, he's pretty good.
Yeah.
He's pretty funny. I may have to reconsider that one.
Number two, Ellis Hobbs the third. Number three, Rosie Colvin. So I think we almost covered just about everybody right there.
That's right. I totally forget. And thank you for reminding me that. It's not Ellis Hobbs. It's Ellis Hobbs the third.
We have one emailer suggesting Randall Gay.
Randall Gay's good. Randall Gay's under the radar funny. They love him in the locker room. You know what? That might not be a bad idea.
I'll tell you what. Since you brought that up, we had three emails coming.
Webradio@patriots.com.
Yeah. Bring it on.
Webradio@patriots.com. Let us know 35 years from now. Let's say the Patriots run the table, finish 19-0. Who is going to be the go-to guy for the media in 2042 or 2043? When the next team tries to go 19-0, who's going to be the guy who gets before the cameras and tells them, reminds them of the greatness of this New England Patriots team?
Dan Klecko.
I like that.
I don't think Dan Klecko is going to be. Although, you know what? That locker, number 90, man, that's a good locker for the media.
It is.
Everyone who's had that locker, Steve Martin, Dan Klecko.
Who's like the mayor
of
the Patriot locker room in 2002.
LaKeven Smith. Everyone who's been at that locker, everyone who's been at that corner, been a good guy. Good to talk to.
Our buddy Kenny chimes in and says, I don't think there's any doubt it's Rodney Harrison.
That's interesting.
And then adds 31-13 Patriots this Sunday. So okay. A little bit of a prediction and an answer to the question. So a 2-for-1 there by Kenny.
Rodney Harrison would be a good one. Rodney Harrison. We're actually finding a lot more guys than
Harrison speaks his mind now. So yeah. When you think about it. So, you know, now 35 years from now, when there's nothing else to worry about, it's all going to come out.
He's going
to
be close to 70. I could see Rodney Harrison. You know, we're coming up with some good ones here.
This is good.
These are good. Keep those emails coming. Let us know.
Here.
If you haven't emailed us already, webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. Let us know who you think is going to be the next Mercury Morris.
We're watching the NFL Network still here. We're watching the replay of Sunday's game, and no Phillip Rivers out there, and which means not a whole lot of jawing going on between the opposing defense and the offense. Billy Joe Volek came in and led the game-winning drive against the second-ranked pass defense in the NFL, so go figure. And I'll tell you what, Phillip Rivers has kind of been a spark plug this week, I guess, in sports talk radio circles out in San Diego, and a little bit here, too, for the fact that he doesn't have any problem running his mouth.
Yeah.
Likes to talk. Borderline D-bag.
Yeah. Borderline?
No?
Okay, borderline?
Maybe he just is. I wanted to be nice.
Borderline?
You know?
A lot of people would say that he's the second coming of Ryan Leaf when it comes to dealing with the media.
I was going
to
say, like, Ryan Leaf 2.0.
He really is.
I could see him having a breakdown where he said, don't talk to me! You know,
there's a great blog out there, and I'll give it a shout-out. Doesn't need my support, but there's a great blog that just absolutely hates Phillip Rivers, and it's called Kissing Susie Colbert.
They don't like a lot of people.
Hate
they really hate
Phillip
Rivers.
Yeah. It's great. If you check it out right now, it's kissmesusie.blogspot.com. It's a fantastic site. And they absolutely bury Phillip Rivers whenever they're given the chance.
How much did they pay you for that plug?
They didn't pay me anything for the plug. I'll
is
get
that
my other
all these pretzels from? Chris Price just down 3 bags of pretzels during the break, guys,
I'm
by the
really,
way.
Really, really high. I haven't
hungry.
Had lunch yet. I'm
How
sorry.
Come, you know what? I got to ask, because I know the PFW guys get free food a lot. So the next time we're co-hosting, if anybody wants to chime in,
Give us
a little bit of a sample. We'll plug your business on the air. I know I can't be making business transactions as a guest host. I understand that. This could be my last hosting duty. But anything for food, folks. As Mike Rabel once said to us, were you there at the celebrity shootout, the Matt Light celebrity shootout?
No.
They had a whole catered lunch, and he walked by. You guys want anything for a free lunch? And we're all sitting there stuffing our faces. Like, oh, you're right.
You lay out free food for a member of the sports media, they will show up.
Yeah, absolutely right.
10 times out of 10, you lay out free food for the sports media, they will show up. My favorite Phillip Rivers story goes back to last year's divisional playoff game.
Yes.
And when he started jawing with Mike Vrabel, and Mike Vrabel turned back to him and said, you're not Drew Brees. You're not Drew Brees. And the thing is, everyone else around here, and he points to all of Phillip Rivers' teammates, you're not. They know you're not Drew Brees either. Phillip Rivers loves to run his mouth, and I think that if he tries to concern himself with that aspect of the game on Sunday, I think it's going to be an awful long game. If he ends up playing at all, first of all,
yeah,
it's going to be an awful long game for Phillip Rivers.
I think that story's been a little overblown, to be honest.
Yeah, but it's,
all right,
it's still
so he
a
runs
story.
His mouth, but I mean, yeah, he's a you know. He's a lot of things.
But no, a lot of guys.
I don't
want to
slip because I'm going to slip at some point.
A
but.
Lot of guys on that team, though, are like that. It's a culture there. And we.
Well, Merriman has his own signature dance when he sacks the quarterback.
Shansky has already said something that may or may not have made its way to the Patriots bulletin
board. Oh, it made its way.
It's there are guys on that team who are more inclined to shoot their mouths off. And we talked about this before the Jacksonville game. Why is that the case? Every time someone plays the Patriots, they always provide fuel for Belichick's fire, grist for the mill, you know, bulletin board material.
It doesn't
for lack
matter
of a
now.
Term.
Do we need it now? It's the AFC Championship.
But it helps.
You're planning to get to the freaking Super Bowl. Do you need anything to push over the edge here?
I'm not
really.
Saying it changes things, but I'm saying it doesn't help. When you see that bulletin board. Exactly. Thank you, Napoleon.
I'm not so sure it even matters anymore. I really
I think, you know what? These guys think differently, though. These guys, it's for whatever reason, it gets in their heads, and Belichick uses it to his advantage when it comes to motivation. There are only so many ways you can motivate a perfect team. There are only so many ways you can motivate a team that's gone 17-0 to this point in the season.
That's
at
my
some
point. I think 19-0 is the motivation.
But at some point, though, you get fat and happy. And I'm not saying that it's a that it's, you know, that it's something that, that is a defining moment in the game, but I'm saying it's the kind of thing that just gives him a little extra push.
You trying to tell me I'm putting on weight?
I'm not trying to tell you you're putting on weight. You're eating a lot of muscle sandwiches. Maybe too many muscle sandwiches.
It's bulk season. Hey, the emails are flying in, by the way.
This is great. Webradio@patriots.com. Webradio@patriots.com. Tell us who you think is going to be the next generation's Mercury Morse. Who on this Patriots team is most likely to be the go-to guy for the media 35 years from now when another team tries to run the table?
Steve from Maryland says, I agree with Kenny. Who else but Rodney? 35 years from now, he should have finally finished paying off all his fines and should be more than ready to carp on about the good old days. Very good point. He may need a few years to pay off his fines in the last 3 weeks. Our buddy Eric says Teddy Bruschi, of course. You know, that's a good point because Bruschi's kind of like the what's the word I'm looking for? Like he epitomizes Patriot football. Don't you agree? Like
he's a guy
all he's been through, and
he's a guy who loves that logo on the side of the helmet. Yeah. More than I think anyone else in that locker room.
Never had his own agent. He was his own agent. Yep. You know, he always wanted to stay here.
Yeah.
Much like Troy Brown.
Yep.
Is like the prototypical Patriot. But Teddy Bruschi had the stroke and everything that came with that. So I think people would reach out to him a little more. That's good. The love fest continues. I might start singing.
Don't start singing.
You want me to sing?
Read some more emails. Let us know.
That's all we got so far. But I'll tell you, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, about 6 or 7 have come in.
This is good. This is keep hitting us with
we
emails.
Like
Webradio@patriots.com. I love this. This is something that I've been thinking about.
It's actually a very good question.
And they brought up a couple of really good angles. I didn't think that Rodney might be that guy. I didn't think Rodney might be that kind of guy who would do that kind of thing. But you know what? I think in retrospect, I think he's a pretty good choice.
Yeah.
We're looking for guys who may or may not be, 35 years from now, the go-to guy for the media the next time a team tries to run the table. Next time a team tries to go 19-0, who is going to be the guy who the media runs to off of this 2007 Patriots team to remind us how good this team was?
In case you forgot, we were the best. See, I like Mercury Morris. He's okay. He's okay with
me. He's great because he's crazy.
He is a little crazy.
He's crazy. He starts. Here's a 60-something-year-old guy who's rapping.
I think he still wears his uniform.
I
to bed. I think he wears it to bed.
You know what? And that's not such a bad thing. Let me make this perfectly clear, though.
Okay.
I have tremendous respect for anyone who even took a snap in this league. It's a hard league.
Absolutely.
It's a difficult league to be a part of. It's a tough thing to do to make it to the National Football League. That being said, Mercury Morris is a special brand of nuts. I really think that. I really, you know, I think it's time for these guys. And as the games have gone on, we've seen it more and more. I think they're starting to let go. I think they're starting to say, okay, you know what? I think our time is coming.
It's inevitable.
I think it's time for us to leave the stage because they've started to say, well, you know, they may do it, but we got there first. That's what we're seeing more and more of.
I landed on the moon first.
Yeah.
I planted the flag. Oh, all right. God bless you, you know. He did bring up the fraternity angle.
Mm-hmm.
They are the founding chapter. Kind of like the Tri-Lambdas, Revenge of the Nerds.
I like that.
So who plays the role of Booger on this team?
Yeah, who plays the role of Booger? Yeah. Ogre and the rest of
Ogre?
Them. Yeah.
We have an Ogre.
Who?
Who's our Ogre? You know who our Ogre is.
Who?
Mike Vrabel.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Yes. Nerds.
Nerds. Mike Vrabel wants to crush nerds.
Lives to crush nerds.
He lives
to
crush nerds. Mike Vrabel would be the perfect ogre. No disrespect to Mike Vrabel. I'm not saying he's an ogre. I just kind of like in that role. But I think Chris Price, you're the one who brought that up a couple of years ago. Hilarious. Really good stuff.
Thanks.
We got to do this. We have to take a whole show and just break down like comparisons of who's going to play the role of this or that. Really have some fun with it. But the Mercury Morris thing is going well. We got some emails that are flying in, of course, and a lot of possibilities. But to get back to the actual football game for a second, I guess we should probably touch on that a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay, just a little bit. But I think a big matchup here, the linebackers, that pass rush we talked about from San Diego, they're going to generate most of the pressure from the outside with Phillips and Merriman. And a lot of people seem to think that Phillips is as good as Merriman. Maybe not better, but I think Merriman gets the hype because he's the Pro Bowler and he has the sack numbers. Also, he has the dance, the little lights out dance.
Lights out.
We all love the lights out dance, and he has all that stuff going for him. But Phillips is pretty darn good on the other side, too, and probably benefits from Merriman's success as well.
Exactly. One of the things that Belichick talked about yesterday during his press conference was that, and he compared it to the situation he had with the Giants when they got Lawrence Taylor. Well, it's easy to run away from Lawrence Taylor.
Exactly.
You couldn't run away from Lawrence Taylor when, say, you know, Carl Banks was on the other side. And I think that they're learning. You have to learn if you're paired with another outside linebacker, you have to learn how to play with them. And Belichick made the point of saying they've learned to play very well together, to feed off of each other's strengths, and to make that defense much, much tougher.
Yeah, I can't. I agree. I kind of got lost in the train of thought for a second. You just mesmerized me.
Such an unbelievable
with your analysis.
Thought. It was such an unbelievable thought.
I lost
frozen.
My train of thought there, but I do agree. They have to get after Brady. They have to do more than Jacksonville did. They go back to the point at the beginning of the show. Cannot sit back and play this snooze fest, boring cover zero defense, or whatever you want to call it. Get after him.
You have to be.
You
willing.
Gotta punch him in the mouth.
You have to be willing to take chances when you play the
Patriots. You have to take chances.
You have to be willing to, and I've said this a million times, I'll say it again, you have to be willing to lose games 100-0 because you're not going to beat them in a 10-7 game or a 13-10 game.
Well, that'd be a sucky game. Huh?
Well, but you're just not, the way this offense is set up, you know, you're going to have to automatically start with the assumption that they are going to put between 21 and 28 points. That's your starting point. You're going to have to assume that they're going to put three touchdowns up on you from the jump.
I'll tell you what. The Chargers sideline is going to be pretty funny if they're down big in this game early.
Yeah.
LT's going to go through a box of Kleenex himself. He will pout about something.
I want to keep the binoculars trained on Phillip Rivers if it does get ugly down the stretch. Because you're going to see him. I'll bet you dollars to donuts that, you know, chances are pretty good that you're going to see him drawing with fans.
Oh, he will.
Coming in and out of the tunnel.
He's joined with fans at his own stadium.
Yeah.
Tells his own fans to shut up. He should just take the Michael Vick approach.
Chances are. What's the Michael Vick
approach? The one finger salute.
Yeah, wouldn't be surprised if we saw that.
That's coming eventually.
Yeah.
Or the old Brian Cox double barrel coming out of the locker room.
Double guns.
Where was that, in Buffalo or
that was
Miami?
That was in Buffalo when he played for Miami.
Oh, that's great.
That's a great clip. Yeah, that was a great
clip. The NFL film guy is like right there underneath him, getting that wide-angle shot. He comes out with both fingers blazing. Boom, 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 boom.
I think it will be interesting to see if the locale plays a role in Sunday's game, whether it's fans getting on Rivers, whether it's the cold having an effect, snow, cold, whatever, having an effect on the game. Belichick said today the only thing the cold means is dress warm.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to see if that does indeed play a role in this game on Sunday.
I think maybe you can rattle his cage defensively if you get after him early, but he played pretty well in that cold game. I got to give him some credit.
He did. He did play well, but the Indianapolis defense
just laid down. But you know what? I thought he made some real nice throws. You got to kind of be careful of how much stock you put into it, because Volek comes in and then leads the game-winning drive and completes three or four passes, runs in for the winning touchdown. So how much of that was Indy's defense not getting it done, and how much is the offense? It's a balance,
I guess.
It's
all about getting after him early.
Yeah.
If you get after him early, you rattle him a little bit, you turn him into a different quarterback. You get inside his head. We've seen it plenty of times this year.
Yeah.
And he's not only playing against the 11 men on the other side of the ball, he's playing against the 65,000 or so people that are in the stadium as well.
He's playing against the voices in his head.
He gets him out of his game early, and he can be rattled. He can be thrown. He can be rattled. He can be taken out of his game. And I think it's easier than a lot of people would think.
Our buddy Eric chimes in. Troy Brown. He's been around forever. Too bad no playing time with Moss, Stallworth, Welker, and Gaffney.
He has been around forever. However, I don't think that he would be that guy.
Yeah, as a media darling?
No.
Yeah.
No, he's been around forever, and it's not
like
the media doesn't.
But he is the face, but he is one of those faces of the Patriots.
Yeah. Oh, he's very much one of the faces of the Patriots, but at the same time, I don't think he's one of those guys.
He didn't play enough this year.
He hasn't played hardly at all.
That's why Colvin's tough, too, because Colvin's on IR.
But you know and I know that Roosevelt Colvin's never met a microphone he doesn't like.
That's true. He's a talkative sort. But he doesn't say a whole lot now.
Yeah, but 35 years
from now.
He talks
a lot, but doesn't say much.
35 years from now.
35 years from now, he'll be himself. Yeah, he'll be himself. But, you know, that's the thing, though. See, we don't know. You could say that about any guy. Because a lot of guys hold back here because of
code of conduct. But you can sense when a guy is holding back, and you can sense when a guy is being truthful.
Genuine. Yeah,
there are guys in that locker room.
I'll give you that. Okay.
There are guys in that locker room, when you ask them a direct question, guys like Bruschi and Harrison specifically, when you ask them a direct game planning question, they will say, I am not going to answer that question.
and I am not getting fined.
But yeah, as a reporter, you appreciate that, as opposed to, dancing around it and saying, well, and kind of speaking in vague general terms, it's far, far different.
All right, I'll give you that. I don't know. You could take anybody. You could take Tom Brady.
No, see, I think
Mr. GQ.
Yeah, but I think Brady's going to be more concerned with, you know, other things like running for Senate,
fathering his 17 kids. That's not right.
That's not right.
You shouldn't
at all.
Say that stuff.
You
Chris.
Should. You
that was Chris Boyce. I didn't say that.
That was not me. That was absolutely not me. Now, I think the Patriots. The key for the Patriots this Sunday is to get after Rivers early. One of the keys is to get after Rivers
yes.
early. Is to rattle him.
Rattle the
to
cage.
Get him out of his game. To and you want to make Rivers beat you though. At the same time, you want to make Rivers be the guy who stops you.
Yeah, but against this pass defense, you really want to dare quarterbacks to beat you? I mean, A.J. Feely almost beat him. Who's the stiff in Baltimore?
Kyle Bowler.
Kyle Bowler.
Yeah, but they had. See,
What? What no, is it now?
I don't see it happening. I don't see it happening.
Oh, are we going to say it's the Rivers played the game of his life? Or are we going to just say that pass back, defense is not good?
Come back here again next week and say Philip Rivers played the game of his
Rivers
life.
Rivers played the game of his life. That was the day he became a Charger. You know, I don't know, Chris. I don't trust the pass defense entirely. And I do think they can be beaten through the air. I'm not so sure it's smart to say, you know what, let's just let Philip Rivers beat us. Because I think he did a good job beating the Colts.
Yeah.
He and Volek. It was obviously a two-man show when he got hurt. Although he told the fans he was coming back. He did not come back. He came back out of the tunnel. Maybe that's what he meant.
I think you're going to need to see a better performance in pass defense this week, especially from the secondary. As opposed to last week against Jacksonville.
Well, they're going to have to be better because now the Chargers can throw in the tight end element here. But the Jaguars did not. They're going to go out there four wide. They don't have a guy like Gates.
We don't know how healthy Gates is. If Gates is going to be a decoy, first of all, if he's going to play at all. Second of all, if he's going to be a decoy, if he could do anything out there on the field, he certainly didn't look like the kind of guy who could take over a game when he's been 100% healthy. He certainly didn't look like that guy last week.
Yeah, but you and I know they're going to be preparing for him to be 100%, which is what they always do.
Yeah, and if he is anywhere near 100%.
They're not going to leave him alone and say, okay, well, we know he's hobbling, so we'll just leave him open all day.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that. But if he is out there, if he's anything resembling what he used to be, or, you know, pre-injury, that's where it's going to fall on Rodney Harrison.
This is a huge game for Harrison.
This is going to, especially in the wake of his performance against Jacksonville, he was the first guy to tell you he did not have a good week. He didn't have a good game against the Jaguars. This is going to be a big test for him.
And he should probably chill out with the fines too.
Probably chill out with
it. I know he addressed that today and says I'm going to still be aggressive. Well, there's a difference between aggressive and dumb. And those penalties were uncalled for, and you can't do it. You know the rules. You can't do it. That's 15 yards. That's 30 yards. Two penalties. You give him 30 yards. You can't in a close game. You cannot put the team in field goal range with a penalty of that nature. Anything toward the end of the half or at the end of the game, you got to play smart.
Let us know what you think. WebRadio@Patriots.com. That's WebRadio@Patriots.com. Do we have some sound from the locker room today? We can get to that.
We might have a little bit of locker room sound, which we should get to. I'm not sure exactly who we have on the sound, but. Our buddy Big D's on to hook us up anyway.
Because I know
we have Maroney and Wes Welker.
There we go. Kool-Aid.
And then we can wrap up too with some of Belichick.
We will. We're going to come back in a little bit. Let's get to some sound. Lawrence Maroney, Wes Welker.
Lawrence Maroney.
What?
How do you like this team's chances?
What kind of question is that? How like our chances
are? How confident are you then?
We feel good about ourselves. You know, we ain't overconfident. We just know we got to go out there and play our best 60 minutes because we going against a great team, great offense, great defense. So we know we can't make no mistakes out there.
Do you feel like you finally put the running game on the map? I mean, it's so overlooked with
passing. I wouldn't say all that. You know, the running game always been there. It's just we really didn't have to use it. You know, the pass game was doing a lot for us, scoring a lot of points for us. So the run game wasn't used. You know, like I said earlier, when the run game is needed, you know, we're going to show to everybody that we do have a run game. It's straight. You know, I really don't feel the cold. You know, we got heated benches, so, you know, I stay a little warm out there on the field.
How do you keep your hands warm?
Gloves. It don't work all the time, but they all right.
How do you feel about
I feel good. You know, the line been doing an excellent job. You know, I feel real comfortable behind them guys. They've been doing their thing, the receivers, making downfield blocks. So I feel real comfortable running the ball right now.
Lawrence, how much better do you feel now than you did a year ago? Kevin was just talking about the maturity level and learning.
Physical-wise or?
No, just mentally.
Mentally?
Yeah.
I feel a lot better because, you know, I was going into a situation where I really didn't know what to expect last year. Didn't know how the playoffs was going to be, how the atmosphere was going to be, the intensity level. Now getting a year under my belt, I got a feel for what to look for, how it's going to be played, the game speed and all that. So mentally, I feel a lot better than I did last year. Not really. You know, I've been playing running back a long time, so, you know, I know how to play running back, so it don't take too much to get into the game. You know, a couple plays here, a couple plays there, you know, I'll be all right.
Lawrence, where did the authority come from? It seemed like last week you ran with a tremendous amount of authority.
Oh, did I? I thought I was still tap shoes. Still I had my tap dancer shoes on. No, it's been all the time. You know, like I told folks, you know, I do have the power. It's just got to know when to use it and when not to use it and what type of game it's going to be. And that was a physical downhill game that deserved a downhill running style.
You think that's going to be the case again? You know,
most likely, looking at them on defense, they have a real physical defense, real big guys out there. So it ain't going to be too many moves you're going to be able to make out there on the field. It's going to be a one-cutting downhill type of game.
How much of a concern is their propensity for causing turnovers, obviously?
Well, they number one at causing turnovers, and we got to continue holding on the ball, and hopefully we don't fumble and don't give them opportunities to score points.
That sort of seems to have stuck in your throat a little bit, the tap dancing.
No, that's a little joke. You know, I like to laugh at all the time. You know, the media the one that said it, so, you know, I like to joke around with them.
You go. Talking about the weather again, do you like your chances a little bit against a warm weather team?
I really don't feel like the weather affects people. I think players are going to be players no matter what the weather is. I think they're going to come ready to step up to the challenge just like we got to be ready to step up to their challenge. So I don't think the weather really going to affect them guys. They're going to come out here. They're going to come out hard and give us their best shot, and we're going to try to give them our best shot. It really doesn't matter. I think a game is going to be a game.
You said that you learned a lot last year with that experience.
Well, it's been real fun, you know, just being able to go out there and help the team, you know, to establish the run game and going out there just having fun. So, you know, the second half has been real fun for me.
Lawrence, you talk about San Diego and you're good at turning over the ball. You guys don't give it away very often. How good have you guys been at that?
Well, it's going to be a challenge. It's going to be a challenge for us, you know, because they like to strip. They like to get the turnovers. They like to cause fumbles. So, you know, hopefully our stats stay the same and we don't give them the ball. Like I said earlier, give them opportunities to put points on the board and, you know, and just keep the ball in our possession.
What did you learn when you say you learned a lot from last year? What
did you learn? Well, how the intensity level is going to be, the speed of the game, you know, how the game should be played and, you know, just going out there knowing what to expect. You know, now I have a better feel on how to read defenses better than I did last year. So just knowing where the hole might be before it get there.
Lawrence is also better last year during the postseason. You were trying to play through injuries. Is it better this time around?
It's always better when you don't got to play through injuries and you can just go out there and have fun.
Did you play your college games in the Metrodome?
Unfortunately, yeah. Didn't have to go outside to the cold. You know, we had a dome and I stayed inside all the time.
Wes Walker.
You know, I don't know. I think it's just kind of I was low man on the totem pole, and you know that's the way it goes sometimes. And you know, it's just part of the business, and you just gotta move on and go from there.
So you weren't even surprised at the time?
I was surprised, just because I mean, being a rookie, I didn't know that they could release you after you made the team. I didn't realize it was a weekly basis thing, so I was a little shocked in that regard. Exactly.
You made some plays in the preseason that year. I mean, how encouraging was that for you to know that you had the ability to play?
Yeah, I mean, it gave me some confidence that, you know, I can, you know, because I really wasn't sure, you know, going into the games and stuff. You know, I'd had a good training camp and stuff, but I didn't know going into the games whether I'd be able to, you know, play with those guys or not, and so that was good to see in those games of being able to play well out there.
Forgive my ignorance, but who were they making? Who did they let you go to make room for? Do you remember?
I don't remember. I'm not sure.
Do you remember the point where you realized you did belong in the NFL?
I don't know. I guess once I made the team, you know. So.
Wes, a lot of people talk about Tom Brady spreading the ball around. How good has he been distributing and finding other options this season, especially last week against Jacksonville? I mean, they try to shut you down, they try to shut Moss, but he's got four or five other options, and he's really good at hitting those targets.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's a smart guy, and, you know, he spreads the ball around real well. And, you know, guys, we have a bunch of guys who can make some plays and get open, and Tom's going to find the open guy and make sure that, you know, we're trying to move the ball down the field.
How much is that preached either through the offensive coordinator or the other coaches?
To what? To spread the ball around or whatever? You know, I mean, it's not really stressed that much. I think it's just part of what happens. And, you know, we just got to make sure we're in our right spots. And either you're going to get the ball, and sometimes you're not. And you just got to make sure you're in the right place at the right time.
Make sure you keep your head in the game because you never know when the ball's going to come.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you try and, you know, make sure you're staying in it, running your route, doing your plays the way and executing the way you're supposed to.
Have you seen much of Darren Sproles? You relate pretty well to his kind of game, the way he plays the game.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen him a little bit. You know, he's obviously a very dangerous returner, and you know, that's kind of how, you know, I got my start as a return man and trying to make some plays there, and he's definitely made plenty of those this year.
He's also got the height thing.
Right.
He said to overcome too.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, being undersized like that, you know, you got to use your quickness and speed and things like that to, you know, try and overcome some of those other obstacles.
I think San Diego's defensive secondary is so solid.
What's that?
What makes the defensive secondary so solid?
You know, they got a bunch of big, physical, fast guys who can fly around to the football real well and are really good with the ball in the air and that, you know, they do a great job out there, and we're definitely going to have our hands full with them this week.
All right, welcome back. You just heard a little bit from Wes Welker and Lawrence Maroney from the locker room this afternoon.
L. Dot,
as Kool-Aid. Chris Price has nicknamed him.
Cool Day. No, that wasn't my nickname.
Oh, it's not?
No, that's one of his several nicknames.
He's got like 100 aliases. He's like, yeah. Apollo Creed.
Kool-Aid.
The Master of Disaster.
Hey, this is Lawrence Maroney, a.k.a. Kool-Aid, a.k.a. L. Dot. A.K.A. L. Train.
L. Train.
The Count of Monte Fisto.
I like that one.
On a more serious matter, I hate to crack a joke before we get into this, but we have to touch on the Randy Moss situation a little bit today. Obviously, everybody knows what's going on, and the PFW guys talked about it before we came in. But we do have a bit of an update. Our buddy Mike Reese from the Boston Globe has chimed in with a statement from the attorney representing Rochelle Washington, who filed a restraining order against Moss, and they released a statement today, and I'll paraphrase the long statement. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but she's basically saying, you know, their client has been with Moss throughout his trials and tribulations. She refuses to be further disrespected by him. It has never been her intention to hurt Mr. Moss in any way. However, she has suffered mental and physical harm as a result of his actions. Calls herself a battery victim here. Also says she's been unfairly characterized as someone simply seeking financial gain, and the statement goes on to add that, in fact, it was Mr. Moss's representatives who first contacted our office to offer a six-figure settlement.
Now we're into a game of he said, she said.
Right, and it also goes on to say, you know, they said they've heard Moss's statement. He has acknowledged that he was at Ms. Washington's Florida residence and that he was, quote-unquote, guilty of an, quote-unquote, again, accident, which occurred. The statement goes on to say that, however, Mr. Moss fails to mention how his reckless and degrading conduct rendered Ms. Washington unable to drive her vehicle to seek medical attention. The last couple lines are a bit of a blow here.
Mm.
As the evidence will show, there is serious doubt that Mr. Moss is capable of recalling with clarity the exact details of what transpired that evening. As Mr. Moss has previously stated, do your homework and check his resume. So now they're taking a shot at Randy's past.
Right across his
too.
Bound.
So
yeah.
That, in a nutshell, is the statement from her attorney's office. You know, I don't know all the facts here. We've both gone over it the last couple of days, and we know what's been said on both sides. I'm not going to sit here and cast guilt or innocence. the timing is bad. That's all we could say. And I think Moss agreed to that yesterday. This is obviously bad timing to have this happen now.
Yeah, and it is. It's horrible timing to have it happen at this stage of the season. One of the things that strikes me, though, is that and no matter what you think about the incident, no matter what you think about what happened, guilty, innocent, he said, she said, I have no doubt in my mind that the Patriots find a way to deal with this.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a big deal on the field.
I don't think it'll be a big deal on the field. They've been hit with stuff like this a million times before.
Oh, they had Harrison's HGH suspension
exactly.
at the beginning of the
year. They had Spygate. They've had the release of Lawyer Malloy. They've had time and time again.
You know, this
franchise has been faced with difficult situations like this one. And again, I'm not trying to minimize this incident. I'm not trying to
say
it didn't happen. I'm not trying to look down, and I'm not trying to say that she's guilty. All I'm saying is the Patriots have found a way around things like this before. Problems, distractions, whatever have been placed in their path, and they found a way around them, over them, through them, whatever. I don't see this case being any different when it comes to an overall distraction, when it comes to on-field stuff. One of the amazing things is, you know, 4 days before the AFC Championship game, you could drop this into the lap of another team, and it would send them spiraling off, you know, it would send them shooting off the rails. But the Patriots have shown an ability to minimize distraction, and when faced with something like this, they've shown an ability to get around it.
I guess the problem I have is Moss saying he was guilty of an accident. I don't know what that means. And I need to know what that means before I can really judge this one way or the other. Because a lot of people have come out and says, he sounded remorseful and innocent. Well, how do you sound innocent? Listen, I'm not saying one way or the other, but what does an accident mean?
It's he said, she said at this point. It's two different versions of the same story. Now, I've always learned that, you know, it's never as bad as you think it is, never as good as you think it is. So it's probably somewhere in the middle. There was probably some sort of accident. It's undeniable at this point. There was some sort of incident.
Well, there's something
both,
there.
Both sides have,
yes,
both sides have
there
agreed.
Is something there.
There was some sort of incident. And whether it was an accident, whether it was deliberate, whatever, we don't know. So I would rather than come out with a statement at this time saying, I feel X on this topic, I don't feel comfortable saying that because I don't know all the facts. We don't know
That's
all the
what
facts.
I'm saying. I don't know what he means by accident. I don't think he did not get into that when further pressed for comment about specifically what do you mean by an accident.
I think it was a smart move on his part to go to Belichick last
Friday. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
When he was initially being, in his words, threatened.
Right.
I think it was a smart move on his part to go to Belichick to let the team know that something like this could break, that something like this had a chance of getting out there. And he did his level best to get ahead of the story, as far ahead of the story as he could, by coming out the other day, making the statement, saying what he said. He didn't have to do that. I think it was a wise move on his part from a PR perspective to try and get as far ahead of the story as he could, to try and control the story. It remains to be seen what's going to happen going forward, especially in the wake of this statement coming from her attorneys.
Not for nothing, but to tell us to check his resume.
I don't know
All
if
right.
that's...
And I know he's never been accused of... Well, no, he has, actually. There was an incident that came up with the mother of his four children many years ago, and there was some claim that he threw hot water on her and pulled a Kenyatta Jones. Remember Kenyatta Jones from years ago?
I think that was from the Boston Globe story today.
Okay, so I mean, no, we should not check your resume.
But at the same time, we're not pulling these stories out of thin air.
No.
There are stories
out there.
And
none of those stories from the past have anything to do with this incident.
Exactly.
It's not guilty. You can't just say, well, he's done some stupid stuff in the past, so he must have done this. But, you know, that's the problem in the court of public opinion, is that people are going to look at his resume, quote-unquote, and see some of the incident with the meter maid. Years ago, the marijuana stuff, which is to me wasn't that big a deal, but a lot of people made a big fuss out of that. You know, walking off the field, people are going to make assumptions about his character, and now they're going to start going back and saying, "Well, okay, based on all that, yeah, he probably did this." And that's not fair.
The one thing that hits me the wrong way is the timing of the whole thing.
Right, it's a bad week to have this happen
on both sides. If it did indeed happen, it took place during the bye week, and that's a time where, as we've seen, and we're sitting here watching the Dallas, New York Giants game.
We're all pissed off because Tony Romo went to Mexico.
Exactly.
Look what happened here.
It's a week where guys can get in trouble, either from a PR standpoint or worse. And I think the fact that something happened that week, I think, sticks in the craw probably of a lot of folks upstairs at this point.
Is that not a little odd that there's more focus on Tony Romo vacationing in Mexico with Jessica Simpson during his bye week than what Randy Moss has been alleged to have done?
Well, that's why they have the paparazzi following Tony Romo and Jessica Simpson.
Nobody, I don't think the paparazzi doesn't follow Randy Moss.
Just, yeah, that's a story for another day. But I think the timing on both sides is curious. I think the timing that they wanted to come out with this story the day before the Jacksonville game for what I'm presuming to be maximum exposure, it just strikes me as a little bit odd and a little bit off-putting on both sides.
A couple of emails before we close shop today. Our buddy Chris says he's born and raised in Beantown, diehard Pats fan, and he has some thoughts for us. I think Chris is saying we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. He says, why are we talking about 19-0 and booking flights? I know confidence is healthy, but anything can happen, and it's disturbing. Look, 40-mile-per-hour win Sunday will play a huge role. Brady will struggle at times. Our defense does just enough to hold it down. I guess being 17-0 has perpetuated this, but let's realize San Diego is a team that was shocked last year by no other than New England. They haven't forgotten. Just think, guys, the Pats have been mistake-free on offense and special teams for a while. How long will it last? And he goes on to mention fluke kickoff fumbles, jarring hits that change games in the playoffs.
All the stuff.
When was the last time Brady had a tip ball picked? And you go back to the Colts game.
Yep.
Manning having a tip ball, having two tip balls picked. Fluky stuff on kickoff returns.
It's all stuff that we've talked about so far.
No, and it can happen. I don't think you can win a game or lose a game on fluke luck alone.
Exactly.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's execution, it's talent. Now, I'm not trying to get ahead of anybody here. I just don't see any scenario where San Diego's going to come in to win this game.
I think the only scenario where San Diego comes in to win this game is if they get up early. And they can control the clock, and they can dictate the pace of the game. But I don't even.
But teams have done that.
I don't see that happening. I see that's the only way that they can win the game.
I mean, the Colts. They had the running backs to milk the clock and couldn't milk the clock.
I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I'm saying in a perfect world for the Chargers, if they want to win this game, that's what they need to do.
One more here. Our buddy Kenny chimes in again and says maybe it's just gut, but I would much rather see Rivers this Sunday than Volek. How much time do you think Belichick puts in to prepare for Volek if he does have to come in? And that said, do their styles differ enough to make a difference in preparation?
They prepare for all 53 guys in the roster.
They'll be ready for Volek. The only concern I would have, if you're really looking for something to kind of pick on, is the whole rallying around the backup quarterback syndrome sort of thing. I think if you're the Chargers, no matter what, you can write all the fantasies and fables you want, but you'd rather have Rivers out there.
Your number one guy.
You want
your number one guy.
Right.
And we've talked a lot. We've kind of goofed on Phillip Rivers a lot today. But at the same time, he's your starting quarterback. He's the guy who's been under center more often than anyone on that team.
He's pretty good.
He's your guy, and I imagine he's the guy you want out there with the money on the table, the AFC Championship game, and they're going to do everything they can to get him healthy in time for that.
He's a clown, no question about it, but that's the guy you want. What I want from you, I want some predictions. I want scores. I want some scenarios. Both games. We'll start with the AFC. You tell me who wins, final score.
I think the Patriots win 34-14 or 34-17.
I need one score, Chris.
34-14. Or 31-14. Let's say 31-14. You're all over the place here. 31-14. I think the Patriots are going to win 31-14. I think it's going to be close for the first 2 to 2.5 quarters. That I think someone is going to make a game-changing defensive play, whether it's a pick, whether it's a fumble return, whatever it is, and I think that's going to turn the tide, and I think the Patriots are going to not cruise down the stretch, but are going to be fairly comfortable with 4, 5, 6 minutes to go.
NFC.
I just see this being Favre.
Oh, the Brett Favre show.
I see a lot of, and we've had a lot of fun at Favre's expense, but at the same time, I just see this being his year in the NFC. Kind of a Favre renaissance, and it's not so much him, but what the guys are doing around him.
It's Favre's time, just like it was Peyton's time last year.
We've talked about how everyone, not so much Favre, but everyone else around him has elevated their game and caught up with him. Ryan Grant is having a great year. Jennings is having a great year. They're doing things on both sides of the football that lead me to believe that they're going to win this game. And again, when they're at home, they're a very tough team at home. Now, granted, the Giants are a very good road team. I'm not looking past that. But at the same time, I think those 3 points you get, the hypothetical 3 points that you get from playing at home is going to help out the Packers in this game. They're going to win it, let's say, 27-24, 27-23.
23 or 24?
23.
You can't just give me a number? You can't just give me one
27-23.
All right. Okay, I'll give you mine here a little bit. I'm sure you've really been waiting for this all day. But on the AFC side, I just think New England is too strong. I think they're going to come out again, first drive, five wide, spread it out, throw it on them early and often. They're going to come out, they're going to score early, they're going to get after Rivers, they're going to rattle his cage a little bit, and he's going to unravel. LT's going to pout on the sidelines. North Turner's going to make a stupid bonehead decision to go for a field goal.
A crazy frowny face. I'm so mad.
And he's just going to do something stupid because, you know, eventually the horse-drawn carriage turns back into a pumpkin when the clock strikes midnight.
Yeah.
North Turner will turn back into a pumpkin. I say Patriots 52, San Diego nothing.
Wow. Holy cow.
I'm just kidding. Okay, on to the NFC. Packers and the New York Giants. My football New York Giants. I don't know here. I like what Green Bay has done this year, running the football, especially in the playoffs. I like their toughness at home. I like Favre's ability to improvise and to be able to avoid the pass rush. I think the Giants can get after the quarterback, and they will get after the quarterback at times. But I'm a little concerned about last week. It took them some time to get going, and I think if you give Favre that much time, he'll make you pay more than Tony Romo does. Now, Romo's a decent quarterback, but there's kind of a big gap of quarterbacks in this league. There's the elite, and then there's just everybody else. Mm-hmm. And everybody else is not nearly as good. Favre is obviously in the elite. Romo is not even close to that category yet.
Okay, wow.
So I'll say Green Bay 32, Giants 20.
Okay.
It's going to be a Favre-Brady love fest for two weeks.
2 weeks.
In Tempe, Arizona.
Yeah.
And I cannot stand it.
Look forward to it. Mike.
I look forward to the game. Not just all the crap for two weeks.
The 2 weeks of hype.
Yeah, I don't really care.
The 2 weeks of hype are absolutely sick. But let's get some plugs in here before the end of the show. Where can we read you? If we heard Mike today and you like him, where can we read Mike?
You can read me on WoonsocketCall.com, PawtucketTimes.com, both newspapers part of the same chain. Check me out whenever you can. I'll be around for a couple weeks, I'm sure. Assuming the Pats win this game, you'll hear more from me in the next coming weeks.
I can be read, Christopher Price, can be read at PatriotsDaily.com, one of the great places to read Patriots information on the internet. That's PatriotsDaily.com. You can also read me at PatsFans.com. I have a daily blog there that I try and update every day. You can also read me, if you're in the city, Boston Metro. You can also read MetroBostonNews.com. I'm there as well.
Chris, it was a pleasure to have you in studio again. I thank John Rook for giving us this opportunity to come in and co-host and take over the show when he's out. I want to thank Gary. I want to thank Dan, our producers, for helping us out today. Everybody that emailed, you guys did a great job. You kept the show going. Hopefully we'll be back soon again, and maybe we'll have some more games to talk, or at least one more game to talk about. We'll see what happens. But Patriots fans, enjoy Sunday. It should be a good one. Thank you and good night.
Go f*** yourself, San Diego.